Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Rick.
Last day. Usual housekeeping items. We only have two agenda items to get through today, plus whatever Maggie has for new business. Unless anybody has any changes to the agenda, we will jump right into scallops. I will turn it over to Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our agenda item for this morning is Framework 24 to the Scallop FMP. This is a specification document. I will point out that later today we are going to have a discussion under priorities whether this framework sets specifications for the scallop fishery for 2013 only, or whether it's a two-year spec package. So we are kind of set up a little bit thinking that it is 1 year, but if you look through your documents, you will see that the numbers are in there for a two-year spec package. Deirdre is ready to give us a presentation. Our plan is to move through the document and take pauses at appropriate times for decision making, and at those points I will be bringing forward motions on behalf of the committee. The other thing that I will point out before we start today is that this is final action on Framework 24, and therefore I will be recusing myself from the final votes. In general, I would say I support the committee motions, and I do recuse myself in that I work for two companies that own fishing vessels that do not exceed the 10% rule or level for conflict of interest, but those companies do have a joint venture in processing, and that processing company does process greater than 10% of the total harvest. So therefore, when we get to voting, Mr. Chairman, if you would note that I will be recusing myself, and that will make the process move more smoothly. So thank you for that, and I will turn it over to Deirdre.
Good morning, everyone. A copy of my presentation is number 9 behind tab number 4, and it's a copy of the presentation. It's very similar to what the Scallop AP and committee reviewed last week, and they did make preferred recommendations on every single section, and I have added to the back of the document something that might be more handy to leave out is basically a table of a description of all of the measures and the AP and committee input related to each of the measures. So it's kind of a quick reference at the back of your PowerPoint slides. So document number 9 you might want to keep handy as we're working through these motions today. Very briefly, Framework 24 is, of course, the purpose to prevent overfishing and improve yield per recruit for this fishery. As Mary Beth mentioned, this may be a one-year action or a two-year action, depending on your discussions later this afternoon about priorities, but the document is set up either way, depending on the decisions you make later. Primary need for this action would be to set the specifications in terms of days at sea and numbers of trips for this fishery. And if you recall, back in January, you did add a handful of additional items to be considered in this framework. We came to you in September to kind of give you an update of where this action was. Since that time, there have been a handful of meetings. All of the new information and recommendations have been included in the document, and there are some sections that I've highlighted in yellow that are what you'd call newer input from the plan development team. The committee considered those last week and essentially was comfortable with everything that was included and made some recommendations specifically with those. So what you're looking at is pretty much a final package of all the different measures under consideration. And as I mentioned, the advisors and committee did make preferred recommendations for all of these different decisions, and document number 6 is a copy of all of their motions. So decision 1, of course, is the main decision of this document, including the specifications. Including the no-action alternative, there are 4 additional alternatives on top of that. We did give you a brief summary of the first few alternatives at the meeting in September, but in general, what the plan development team has done is we, look at the exploitable biomass in all of these different areas and try to, in this case, allocate as much as we could in each area without exceeding too much fishing mortality rates for that area. The table on the screen is metric tons per access area for these different alternatives. You'll see in most cases they're pretty similar with some important differences. Alternatives 1 and 2 include pretty much the same overall catch for this fishery, except we've taken the catch from the access areas in alternative 1, it's for 3 different areas, and alternative 2 is for 4 different areas. So we've taken the same amount of catch but spread it across more areas. And the key addition is Nantucket Lightship. You'll see in alternative 2, there is roughly 600 metric tons that would come out of that area, whereas alternative 1, that's coming from different areas, mostly Hudson Canyon and closed area 2. So it's a small difference, but it's an important difference. It was requested by the advisors to look at this to help spread this effort out. We are in a unique, for recent times, situation where our access areas are not in the best shape right now, so spreading this effort is an important element in the next few years. Alternative 3 and 4 are different primarily in that they maintain the same possession limit that we have right now, which is 18,000 pounds per trip. So each vessel, full-time vessel, under those two alternatives would receive one trip at 18,000 pounds. Compared to under alternative 1 and 2, each vessel would get two trips, but at a reduced possession limit. So that's kind of the major differences between these. Alternative 4, I'll just point out, because you didn't see this prior in September, the plan development team started working on the yellowtail projections, and we spent a lot of time talking about that yesterday. But once the PDT started seeing the yellowtail projections, they were coming in pretty high for the scallop fishery for the existing alternatives, almost the entire U.S. ABC. So alternative 4 was designed, you'll see, it has over a 50% reduction in closed area 2 catch if you compare it to alternative 2, for example, going from 1,000 metric tons to 400. So that's the major difference and why alternative 4 was developed. The committee did include this in the document at the meeting last week, and it has been included in all of the analyses you have in front of you. Moving on, this is a little hard to see on the screen. I just want to point out for individuals that have part-time and occasional permits, just so you're aware, those are a reduced access level. A part-time permit receives 40% of a full-time permit. And so in this case, because we're changing the possession limit in some of these alternatives, the PDT recommended and the committee agreed, rather than giving these vessels two trips at 5,000 pounds each, they will be combined into one trip at 10,000 pounds. So it's a small thing, but important if you're from these permit categories. The industry advisors have also suggested that this be a lottery system. So each vessel, for example, full-time under some of these scenarios, will get two trips. So the lottery system will be designed so that it's random, but one vessel cannot get more than one trip per area. And this is something we discussed with the advisors, and this was their recommendation to basically try to keep it fair and those windfall in either direction of getting two trips in a great area or two trips in an area that's not as productive. So the lottery results will be included after this meeting. We'll include the vessel names and their numbers right in the document so vessels can start with the trading system since vessels are allowed to trade trips. To be clear, the open area access for all of the alternatives are the same. Same days at sea under each of the scenarios for limited access vessels. Very briefly, I have a few slides. I'll just explain these numbers. This is numbers of trips that each alternative includes. And you'll see it's completely linked right to the metric tonnage that we're trying to remove from each of these areas. So you can just get a quick reference of how many trips we're talking about. And you'll see they're not even in all cases because we're trying to spread that effort around. Just keep in mind with alternatives 1 and 2 that the possession limits are different. You'll see that in the columns over to the right. So in each of those alternatives, the big difference really is in access area allocation all the way to the right. That's the entire allocation to the fishery in millions of pounds from access areas. So no action is your top row there, and you'll see this is where we're facing this large reduction in this fishery. It's all coming from access area catch. So right now, the fishery's been catching roughly 22, 23 million pounds just from access areas, whereas next year we're looking at either 7.8 or 6 million, depending on which scenario is selected. So that's where you're getting that big change from recent years. A few slides about the general impacts of these different decisions. This is projected biomass. It's pretty difficult to distinguish the difference here, but in your document number one, it is in color. Document two, I'm sorry. But in general, the point is that long-term projected biomass is pretty similar with all of the scenarios. No action is the dark line on the bottom, so they do perform in the short and long term more favorably than the no action alternative would be really too high of fishing effort levels for the resource. So the alternative four is the one on the top. It does perform slightly better, but in general, they're all essentially pretty much the same. Where they differ is area swept, and this is an estimate of how much time the gear spends on the bottom fishing. So no action is the top alternative, the darker line. That would be the estimated area swept that the fishery would do under those allocations. You'll see a very substantial change from all of the scenarios compared to no action. They're all, you know, much lower in the 4,000 square nautical mile range. And just to point out, right now the fishery is right around 5,000. So this, any of these scenarios is a reduction in area swept compared to what the fishery's been doing recently. Alternative four is the one on the bottom, so it would have the least area swept, which of course is good for impacts on habitat and bycatch. The other scenarios do come in a little bit higher, but again, much lower than current levels and much lower than no action. So finally, this is just a general sense of economic impacts. This slide is showing you total revenue estimated. Again, this is not a prediction trying to forecast the future in terms of revenue. In fact, we assume these are probably on the lower side. But it's just a way for you to compare the alternatives. And in general, in the long term, they're all pretty similar. If you look at the bottom row, the grand total, this is from 2013 through 2028 or something like that. All the different alternatives are in the similar range. Not a huge difference, alternative four being slightly higher than the others. Where you see the difference is in the first year, 2013. The committee's preferred recommendation, which you discussed a little bit yesterday, is alternative two. And you'll see the total revenue for the fishery in 2013 for that alternative is roughly $393 million, compared to, for example, alternative four, which is $20 million less than alternative two. Again, this is the first year, the short-term look at things. And it does start changing pretty quickly after 2014. Some of the alternatives start flipping around, but in the long term, they're all pretty similar. I'm not going to really spend any time on this slide because this was discussed at length yesterday. Again, it's just a summary of the different yellowtail projections that the Scallop PDT performed for the Groundfish Framework 48 discussion. It's just a quick reference here, but again, you made these decisions yesterday, so I won't repeat them. So finally, what inputs do you have from the different groups for this decision? All the scenarios do have similar impacts in terms of exploitable biomass and long-term revenue. Alternative two does minimize the losses in the short term, which is important, as has been mentioned a few times already, that the fishery is facing an overall reduction compared to 2012 anyway because of the status of the resource in the access areas. So it, again, it's about a $20 million difference in some of those alternatives. But they do have essentially the same long-term impacts. The PDT overall does recommend alternative two in terms of spreading out effort. Having a lower possession limit we think is important because of the status of these resources, so vessels are not out as long, so they get more for the product. However, in light of these very low yellowtail values, which you all discussed yesterday, the PDT is also supportive of alternative four, recognizing that constraint. So the advisors considered both this information last week, and they do both recommend alternative 2 as the preferred alternative. I do think Mary Beth and I discussed we were going to take pauses in the presentations and, you know, go through the committee motions. There's only one more motion related to the overall scenario package that you support that I'll just finish with, and then I'll pause for questions in the committee motions. If you select alternative 2 or alternative 4, you may also want to consider an option that's in the document to potentially restrict RSA compensation fishing, which is research set-aside fishing. Right now, we set aside $1.25 million right off the top is set aside for research. And vessels that receive the award are allowed to do that compensation fishing in any area that's open to the fishery that year. So this is a very flexible, both of these, 2 or 4, are very flexible alternatives in terms of areas open. So vessels that receive this award could fish essentially in all of the areas that are available, including Nantucket Lightship, which the plan development team does have some concerns about. This area is probably the most productive of all of the areas that will open next year, and we really want to save it and protect it for 2014, because 2014 looks like it's going to be very lean in terms of the other areas. So our recommendation to the committee was to do a one-year prohibition of RSA fishing in Nantucket Lightship. Because 1 million pounds, not that we think all the RSA compensation fishing will happen in that area, but there's a good chance, a good percentage of it will. It's close to New Bedford. It's the most productive area probably of all of them. And we want to really, the PDT had a hard time with this because we didn't want to set a precedent that we should be limiting where vessels can go, because we really want to have that flexibility for them to go where it makes the most sense for that individual vessel. But on the other hand, we didn't feel that giving the flexibility to a handful of boats for this additional compensation fishing was worth the risk of potentially impacting 2014 allocations for the entire fishery the following year. So we had this discussion with the advisors, and in the end, they actually felt that no action was better and preferred. They didn't agree that there would be as much of a risk and that many vessels would go into open areas instead. So the committee agreed, so both groups are recommending no action. However, the PDT is recommending that you impose this limit for the 1 year. So this is really the only place in the entire document where you don't have all the same input. And I'll pause there for those two decisions, and there are committee motions related to both.
Thank you, Deirdre. And I would just point out for people that I think Deirdre already mentioned in her presentation is document number 9. Document number 6 reflects all of the committee motions and the AP motions, and I'll be bringing forward the AP motions. And the main document is document number 1. And the decisions and motions I'm bringing forward are found in the main document starting on page 19 for the alternative for specifications, and then the RSA motion follows starting on page 20. So if people want to find that in the documents they have before them. And I'm going to make a motion on behalf of the committee that the committee recommends to move forward the council adopt alternative 2 for framework 24 specifications.
It's a committee motion. No second required. I'm going to go to the audience for any comments. Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smallwood's Fishery Survival Fund. We strongly support this option. It's the only realistic one. One point I just want to make in general is we've been managing the scallop fishery over the last decade for stability, and we've been harvesting each year actually less than what our maximum sustainable yield could have been, with the idea of trying to go over low spots in the recruitment. And for the last 5 years, maybe more, we have not had really successful recruitment in the access areas on George's Bank. And we're taking a very large cut this year, but we're still hoping and praying for recruitment. And our recruitment failure is probably equal, if not larger, than the yellowtail recruitment failure. So we're hoping our best to get through 2013, but 2014 is going to be a crisis year if we don't get access to the northern edge, not only for the scallop fishery, but for the impacts on the ground fishery. So we hope you support this, and we can move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Peter?
Good morning. Peter Hughes, Atlantic Cape Fisheries. I fully support this motion. This is a motion that came out of the AP, this is one of the lesser of two evils that we face in the scallop fishery. Again, we have a lot of confidence in our surveys, and the option four really reduces us back to 75% of access area trips. And is unacceptable. So with that being said, I fully support alternative two. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Comments, questions? John Bullard.
Thank you, Deirdre, for the presentation. I'm just seeing if I read the presentation correctly. In the differences between alternative two and alternative four, it seems to me, if I'm reading them correctly, that in 2013, alternative two provides projected catch of 393 million versus alternative four, 373, so that's $20 million more. Whereas if you look at it over the long term, it's essentially even. Is that correct?
That is correct. Really where you see the difference is that first year. Alternative 4 does start to turn around. As I mentioned, by 2015, you'll notice it's higher.
Right.
Alternative 4 is higher than alternative 2 because you're holding back and then, you know, there
right.
would be that growth. But, yes, for the first year and even the second, alternative 2 performs the best. And over the long run, they are essentially the same, alternative four, just
right.
slightly better.
And then on the next page, the projected yellowtail catch, alternative two is a yellowtail catch on I guess, the fifth line down is 40% in alternative two, which I think is because there are higher landings in closed area two versus 26% in alternative four. So there is a choice. There is a choice. That's the choice. We want higher dollars in the short term for higher yellowtail bycatch. That's the choice. In alternative two. That's the choice we're making. We want higher yellowtail bycatch for short-term revenues. Thank you.
Dave Gaethel and Mary Beth.
Thank you. Deirdre, I'm just need to understand this lottery system a little better. I read the text in 2.1.3 on page 23. Let me just see if I understand it right, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. Everybody will be entered in this lottery automatically, and they'll all be assigned a trip from the lottery, but the trips will be to different areas with different biomass. What I don't understand is, in other words, they may have to fish longer in an area with lower biomass, but are the trip totals, the poundage, the same in all the trips? Or?
They are. It's a great question. We've done a lottery before. So we've had experience with it, and you're correct that depending on how you do in the lottery, you may get a trip allocation to a better area. So you'll be able to fish that area faster with lower costs. That's definitely how the lottery works. You either, you know, win or lose in that situation. However, you are allowed to trade it, so for some vessels, the extra steam time might help outweigh some of those differences. But really, when you're dealing with what we've had the issue for the last few years, the areas do not have enough biomass to give every vessel one trip. They just don't. So we have to spread that out, and this was, you know, the strategy that was used for the last few years to address that problem. But it is the same pounds, so you will have the same catch, but it might take some vessels longer than others.
Okay, and it's, I don't want to say formulaic, but I mean, it's the fishermen, the boat owners don't have to do anything. They're just entered in this automatically, and they're assigned a trip. So there's no element of losing a trip because you didn't do something.
There's no burden on the industry. They would get this right in their permit letter telling them which trips they got.
Okay, thank you.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to respond to John Bullard's comments about the choice on yellowtail. And to me, the choice is whether or not we try to maximize optimum yield for scallops or not. The choice to me is whether we try to maximize optimum yield for scallops or not, and I think alternative 2 does that. And I would point out that the numbers on that particular slide are projections. And so, you know, the actual performance in the fishery is there are many things that will influence that, and alternative 2 gives the industry an opportunity, still with a 30% reduction in catch, to maximize what is available to them.
Laura.
Frank and I are sharing. Mr. Chairman, thank you. I, too, just wanted to respond to John Bullard's comments on the choice for short-term revenue. And while I don't believe it's our job as a council to guarantee any sort of revenue, I can understand why scallopers would vote for guaranteed short-term revenue, because the dollars that they're getting at the dock are determined by things other than just what we do, but a global environment. And with the absence of some foreign supply of scallops, such as Japan, which is the second largest to our supply, that may change over the next couple of years, and they may see dock prices fall. So their desire to go to alternative 2 may be prudent, given the fact that we're dealing with a global commodity where pricing might change. And again, I don't believe it's the job of this council to guarantee returns to the scallop industry. I'm just trying to shed a little bit of light onto why the thinking might be in favor of going for alternative 2 at this point. Thank you.
John Quinn.
Yeah, just a question on the same topic. That 393 represents a 30% reduction from potential 2012 revenue. So that's they're taking a 30% hit, my understanding, even under alternative 2.
Yes, without a doubt, all the measures are less than landings and revenue have been in the last few years. We're getting close to $600 million. You know, this fishing year isn't over yet, but the last year was definitely $550 million. You know, that's where we've been for the last few years.
Rick Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, just tying together this discussion with the one we had yesterday about yellowtail and looking forward, we clearly need solutions in the out years. And thinking forward to 2014, 2015, you know, we're going to need solutions that are responsive not just to the needs of the scallop fishery, but with respect particularly to the yellowtail interactions. And as long as it takes to get anything done, I would just suggest that we treat a couple of issues with urgency, specifically what we discussed yesterday about trying to take a strategic approach to reviewing and modernizing that agreement with the Canadians, first and foremost, but also the Habitat Omnibus Amendment is clearly tied into this question. Because it does have significant implications from a yellowtail perspective. And as long as it takes to get those types of actions completed, I would just suggest that we treat that with a sense of urgency so that we can consider how that would deliver some options for this council that would be responsive to the yellowtail considerations as well.
Anyone else on the council? I call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Fourteen in favor. Opposed? Abstention? 1-14-01. The motion carries. Mary Beth.
And Mr. Chairman, I recuse myself on that vote, just for the record.
Yes, and that's 14-01 and one recusal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And moving on to motion number two, on behalf of the committee, I move to recommend that the council adopt no action regarding restriction on scallop RSA compensation fishing in Nantucket Lightship.
It's a committee motion. I will go to the audience for comment on that. Back to the council. Peter Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I could use a little bit more rationale with this one, because the PDT recommended that lightship, the Nantucket lightship, would be closed. And Ron was just talking about worried about recruitment. So I just need a little more rationale as to why you chose no action.
Actually, the motion initiated from the AP, and we had a hearing committee meeting that day, so usually I would go to the AP and listen through their discussion. So I think I'll turn to Deidre on this and see if she can provide us some input.
I would say, and there's some advisors here that could add to that, I'm sure, that in general the advisors felt that maybe the risk wasn't as great as the PDT thought it was in terms of how many vessels will choose to fish in Nantucket Lightship. Many of the industry advisors at the meeting were explaining that a lot of times, in some cases, vessels choose to go in open areas on purpose, even if it might take a little longer to almost scout out how everything's doing and, you know, for those purposes. So they felt that RSA compensation would continue to come out of open areas. The PDT was looking at 2012 as an example, and so far over half of the RSA has come out of Nantucket Lightship. So to us, that was an indication that we could expect that to happen again next year, and the stakes are pretty high that we need that area to, you know, be there for 2014. So that was sort of the difference. I think some of the industry felt that maybe we were exaggerating the risk, and that many vessels won't go into Nantucket and they'll choose to stay in the open areas. But it is, you know, uncertain in every vessel's choice. But 1.25 million pounds is a good amount when we're only talking about, you know, allocating, I think it was 600 metric tons to that area for the directed fishery next year. You know, you could have just as much RSA coming out of there as the directed fishery.
Drew, did you have something to add to that?
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fisheries Survival Fund. We support this motion because we believe in the basic concept of not forcing the RSA trips into one specific area or telling them where to go, but actually be able to spread out the effort where it makes most sense. Under no scenario do we envision 100% or even over 50% of the trips going into this area, especially, you know, boats from down south aren't going to go all the way up to Nantucket Lightship to make a trip when they can make plenty of trips right out in front of their ports right there. So we didn't want to see people being forced out of Nantucket Lightship and then forced into other areas and putting increased pressure on the Yellowtail or something like that. So this way we're able to spread out the effort as much as possible, use as much of the resource that is available. And so overall, it makes the most sense in our minds. So that's why we support this motion.
John Bullard. Anyone else on the council? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Opposed, abstention, 1, recusal, 1. 14-0-1-1, the motion carries. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Motion number 3 on our list here, I'm not bringing forward, as it really was whether an alternative would stay in the document or not, so I don't think that's a decision point for the council. So I will be moving on to motion number 4.
And I think we'll go back to Deirdre before we do that and let her continue in her presentation.
Thank you. I'm going to pick up on slide number 11 in document 9. Moving on, again, these are the overall decisions still related to specifications, but now we're moving to the general category side of the fishery. So just to point out so everyone is clear, no matter what scenario is selected, alternative 1 through 4, the general category IFQ allocation would remain the same. So there's no difference there. If you recall, this fishery is divided and allocated 5.5% of the ACL, so it's a complete division, and it comes directly from the ACL, so there's no difference. The total catch for this fleet is the same. There was a discussion at the committee level from the PDT when we were thinking about default issues. We, in the last few years and over time, if specification packages are not in place right away on March 1st, vessels do fish under last year's allocations. They roll over until replaced. And we have been in a cycle where the frameworks are not in time. They're not, you know, implemented by March 1st, so those things do roll over from the last year. So there was some concern in this instance that, as an example, that because there's a substantial reduction, GenCat vessels will be starting the fishery in March with a very different allocation than they'll ultimately receive under this framework. So this kind of sparked a discussion of, oh, well, should we be precautionary and do some sort of holdback on that default year? It came around and around, and eventually you'll see from the AP and committee motions that because this is an individual accountability for this fleet, and ultimately at the end of the year, each boat is held to whatever allocation they ultimately got, they decided it wasn't necessary to hold back, if you will, to account for any late implementation. So that's what that issue is about. And then related to access area trip allocations, this was discussed. There are two alternatives in the document, and they come down to how to allocate the trips from closed area 2 to the GenCat fishery. In the past, sometimes we've allocated it to this fishery, but they're never used. It's so far from port. And then in more recent years, we have not allocated those trips to the GenCat fleet. So there is a newer alternative in this document that instead allocates 5.5% of all access area trips, including closed area 2, but then taking those trips and prorating them to the areas closer to shore. So there's a table in your document, table 13 on page 23, that shows you the breakdown of this type of alternative and how it would affect the allocations. Based on alternative 2 that you just selected, I believe there would be 217 GenCat trips. I'm sorry, I don't know if these numbers are working out. It's on page 25. I apologize. Table 13 on page 25 kind of shows you the breakdown. I'll just walk you through it. Alternative 2, the one you just selected, has two rows that are shaded. And the top one, if you go over to closed area 2, will show you that about 217 trips would be allocated under that 5.5% allocation. And if you go with the AP and committee recommendation, instead, we would allocate the row below. We would say, no, don't use those 217 trips in closed area 2. Make that zero, but then prorate those trips into the remaining areas, which would be Hudson Canyon, closed area 1, and Nantucket Lightship. So you'll see those three areas bump up for the difference. But at the end of the day, it's the same number of trips for that fleet for next year. This is the AP and committee recommendation related to this. I'll just flip to the next page and walk you through a few more decisions related to the GenCat fishery, and then we'll pause again for decisions 3 through 8 from the committee motions. So related to payback issues, what I was starting to explain before, we have been in this issue where you'll have 1 year of allocations later replaced, and we're facing a pretty important issue right now. In Framework 24 will most likely not be implemented until May. So the fishery will begin on March 1st, and vessels will receive allocations from last year rolling over, which includes quite a bit of access into Hudson Canyon, which is primarily the issue we're concerned about. A limited access full-time fleet will have two trips potentially in that area, and what I just showed you before is that's way too much effort for Hudson Canyon. It can't handle that amount of effort. So there is some incentive for some vessels to take that effort in March and April before those trips would be reverted to the Framework 24 levels. So the industry advisors pretty seriously brought this up a few months ago, that they wanted to try to look at some sort of disincentive to help vessels not go in there. And, you know, we want to protect that area. There's a lot of recruitment in Hudson Canyon that we hope will be the future for the fishery in the next few years. So they developed an alternative with a pretty hefty disincentive, which would include if you do fish more in the beginning of 2013 with allocations from last year's framework before they're replaced, you're going to lose all of your 2013 trips plus some open area days at sea. And originally they talked about 10 days at sea. The PDT did a little bit of evaluation in terms of actual catch values, and some of the analysis suggested that in some cases actually even more days at sea might be needed to really disincentivize it for all vessels, because some vessels, the difference of a days at sea is that you're on the clock, and however much you can catch is on the clock. But if you go into an access area like Hudson Canyon, you have a possession limit. It's a guaranteed poundage almost, so that there's that incentive. You know you're going to get 18,000 pounds, but you don't know exactly what you'll get in the open areas. So long story short, the advisors developed this payback measure. The committee supports it. PDT supports it, and it's a pretty hefty payback. It's a responsible thing to do to, you know, prevent any excess fishing in these areas that we want to really husband and produce for later. So that's all related to the payback issue, and there are supporting committee and AP recommendations. And then flipping back to the GenCat again, we did develop some GenCat payback measures. Since it is an IFQ fishery, they're slightly more straightforward in terms of reductions directly in catch. So that's been updated, and you can review that section. Again, both the AP and committee support what's been drafted. In terms of the other general category measures for specifications, we do have to set the Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack as well as the incidental target tack. So the document does include some details and measures about that. I'm just going to get you a page number. But in general, I've tried to bold. It's hard to tell on there, but both the AP and committee support no action for the Northern Gulf of Maine, as well as no action for the incidental hard tack at 50,000 pounds. The PDT did develop another alternative based on an updated survey for the Northern Gulf of Maine that's actually supporting a lower hard tack based on the results from that updated survey. So, you know, that does have new information to suggest that the tack is set higher than the maximum, you know, value it should be. I think the advisors and committee took this to say that if we were getting close to this catch level, we'd want to pay more attention to it. But frankly, this fishery is so below what the tack is. I think recent levels have been under 10,000 pounds that people felt, you know, leave it where it is. That's sort of how the discussion went, because there really is no true threat that we're getting up to this level even close. But that's the discussion they had, and I can pause for the handful of motions. The committee did try to combine some of these just for efficiency.
Thank you, Deirdre. So I will move on behalf of the committee to recommend that the council adopt alternative 2.1.5.2 for limited access payback, but adjust the open area days at sea payback to 12 days at sea for all limited access permit types. Also include language for limited access general category IFQ payback as described in section 2.1.5.3. And finally, do not adopt default language for limited access general category IFQ vessels as described in section 2.1.4.2. So that's a complicated motion that combines, several issues that Deirdre described, and I think maybe, Deirdre, if you could just break this down quickly so that people have a good understanding without having to flip through a bunch of, different alternatives and numbers, that would help us out.
Sure. So really this is the first two are focused on the payback, and as I went through that, this is a responsible thing to do to make sure we don't have excess fishing. You want to put that disincentive in there. So the first two parts of the motion address that payback issue, and we are unfortunately in the situation of needing these types of measures up front in risk of these actions being implemented late. And then the final one really is very repetitive, and the committee noticed that it would be repetitive to have some sort of holdback of allocation for the GenCat fleet when they already have to pay back in pound-for-pound overages. So it was viewed as repetitive and unnecessary. So they're really all related, and it would take care of three of the decisions in one motion.
Committee motion, no second required. I'm going to go to the audience for any comments on this. Peter? Peter Hughes, then Ron Smallwood.
Good morning. Due to the delayed implementation of Framework 24, there are default measures that will allow a vessel to take two Hudson Canyon access area trips really without any penalties to them. And a lot of people will look at little loopholes like that and they will exploit them. So this is hopefully going to shut down a giant loophole that is only there because of the delayed implementation of Framework 24. So I am fully supportive of this motion. Thank you.
Ron Smallwood.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just quickly, again, this is brought about by the problem that we don't get timely implementation of the frameworks, and that we need to really work on getting these frameworks in place on time. The second thing, when we discussed this, we were hoping the regional office would get out a permit letter very specific to this payback issue to all permit holders and captains. And when we communicate in multiple languages, including Spanish and Vietnamese, and it would be nice if those letters could go out in multiple languages as well. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. David Pierce.
Yeah, I continue to give credit to the advisors for the way in which they have advised this council. It's been extremely helpful, especially with regard to this particular issue. I've got a question, though, regarding the payback. Just a clarification, Deirdre. I noted in your presentation that you said that the plan development team reviewed the recommendation for payback, but suggested a higher day at sea payback for the small dredge. And it's unclear to me whether or not the committee actually went with the advice from the plan development team. Did the plan development team also recommend 12 days at sea as a payback, or was it higher than that?
Thank you, David. Sure. On the bottom of page 27, this was the first opportunity. This idea came up in September, and the PDT met in October for our first time to review this idea. And what we did is try to summarize what the actual LPUEs for all these different vessels have been in the last 2 years. And what we found is, you know, the 10 number, the industry kind of threw that out there as, this seems like this would be enough of a disincentive. And for full-time vessels, it might be for most of them. What the PDT kind of explored in our analysis of this is that for small dredge vessels that are not as efficient, they might actually, you know, 10 days at sea to them is different than a large vessel. And when you consider it across all permit types, the same disincentive of 10 days, it's not really equal. So we, you know, provided these numbers to the advisors again at their meeting in November, and rather than them adjusting it to say, okay, 10 for the full-time and 12 for the small dredge, we'll just go with 12 because it's higher, it's even more harsh, it's even more of a disincentive, and clearly there are vessels that 10 days would be worth it to take that reduction for the, you know, more guaranteed 18,000 pounds. So this motion is, you know, fishery-wide in terms of permit type. It would be 12 days at sea regardless of your permit type.
Anyone else on the council? David Gaito.
You know, I think my question is to the service on this days at sea payback. I understand the concept and everything, but how would you actually enforce this? How would you ensure compliance? If somebody suspected of of actually, you know, taking these trips and you intend to take their days?
Well, we spelled out the details of that on page 27 of the document, just in terms of if you take one trip or any part of a trip into Hudson Canyon, that would result in a 12 days at sea reduction, and that would be mid-year for 2013. So if you take any trips during the period where some people are able to take up to two Hudson Canyon trips, once Framework 24 is approved and implemented, that would, you know, shortly following that, there would be a reduction of days at sea.
Okay, well, I guess what I'm concerned with is the idea that somebody, you know, you say you're going to dock them 12 days at sea and they come back and say, oh, no, I was just jogging around Hudson Canyon for a couple days because the weather was bad or something. I mean, how do you actually, you know, in other words, what if they dispute your finding? I'm still concerned with how this gets enforced.
Well, we would also be looking at dealer reports to see if there's landings that match up with a declared Hudson Canyon trip, for example. So we'd know that someone landed scallops on that trip.
All right. I mean, as long as you think this is enforceable, I mean, there's always the two elements. There's enforcement and compliance. I think there's plenty of incentive to comply here, but I just want to make sure that there's an enforcement capability in case there's not compliance.
Anyone else on the council? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. In favor, opposed, abstentions, one recusal. 15-001. The motion carries. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of the committee, I move to recommend that the council adopt alternative 2.1.4.2.2 and allocate 5.5% of all access area tax to the limited access general category IFQ fishery, but prorate closed area 2 trips. And this is a motion that initiated at the AP. And Dieter, could you give us a page number real quick on that?
Page 25.
A committee motion. No second. I'm going to go to the audience. Back to the council. I'll call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. 12 in favor. Opposed? Abstention, 1. I must have miscounted. Okay, 13-01, 1 recusal. Motion carries.
Waiting on me, Mr. Chairman.
The floor is all yours.
I was waiting on you, so we're being very polite. That's a good thing. On behalf of the committee, I move to recommend that the council adopt no action for limited access general category incidental catch tack of £50,000 and no action for Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack of £70,000. And those decisions can be found in the main document on page 35 and 36.
Committee motion. I'm going to go to the audience. Any comment? Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor? 14 in favor, opposed, abstention, 1, recusal, 1. Motion carries. Mary Beth.
And we'll go back to Dieter and let her continue in her presentation.
Thank you. I'll pick up on slide 13 of the presentation. So now we're moving away from specifications and things that we need to do for setting allocations. Now we're moving into the other measures that have been considered to be added to this framework, namely first yellowtail. There are a number of measures related to yellowtail flounder bycatch for this fishery. The first issue is really what turned this into a joint action with the groundfish plan. And the discussion is whether to modify. Currently, there is a seasonal closure to the scallop fishery for the access areas on George's Bank. That would be closed area 1, 2, and Nantucket Lightship. Currently, they have been closed since the scallop fishery was first granted access in 99. They've always been closed from February 1st through June 14th to protect the groundfish and reduce those groundfish impacts. So that has been the case every year. Whenever the scallop fishery receives a trip, those months are prohibited for scallop fishing all along. Over time, there's been an interest to look at modifying those seasons based on updated information from the fishery as well as research. So this was included in this framework. We have been, both the scallop PDT and the groundfish PDT have explored a bunch of information over the course of this year. There's a separate document, 2A, I believe it is, and the first 24 pages of that document really walk you through, and you've seen some of this already, the different information that the scallop PDT used to design and develop the new alternatives that are under consideration in this framework. And the two primary sources of information that are summarized in that document are a lot of work we've done with observer data, trying to take, you know, the last 10 years of observer data and see if there's any seasonal trends that we can learn from that, as well as a very focused RSA award through the scallop RSA program for the last year and a half or so, and which has continued again for 2012, that's actually going into closed area 1 and 2 every month since the award was granted. So those two sources of information have been summarized, and over several meetings we've been, you know, looking at that information to see if it can help us decide make this decision. The groundfish PDT, in addition, has taken that same RSA project, and they have also done a toe-by-toe separate analysis. I believe it was included in your binder, perhaps, but they have two separate that will be appended to this framework analyses of, in terms of these seasonal trends for yellowtail and windowpane flounder. There is no overall scallop PDT preferred alternative for this section. We didn't really, you know, get behind one alternative or another. But we did note that in addition to yellowtail bycatch, you know, these seasons could be modified for that purpose, and definitely also for scallop purposes, for the scallop resource. There is such a difference in meat weights that you get out of each animal, depending on the month that it's harvested, that we felt you could explore some of those other months and close them, for example, during those poor meat weight months and really get a lot more yield from those areas. So in general, all of those types of things were considered, and overall the advisors and committee are both recommending to you today option 3B, which did come out of the advisory panel at some point during the year as their preferred recommendation, and that would modify these restrictions to only closed area 2, would be closed for a 3-month period, August 15th through November 15th, and there would not be a seasonal closure at all for closed area 1 and Nantucket Lightship. Just to be clear, the committee included in their motion that they didn't feel that option 3A should be in the document. It was developed over time and kind of tweaked by the PDT, and the committee motion actually does not support that it should be in the document. So just consider that as you're looking through, that is also included in the committee motion. I'm going to just take a slide to go through each of these. There was a interest at the last time I brought this in September to kind of look at this data a little bit closer. So I have one slide for each of the access areas and what we know about them. Try to run through them quickly just to give you some reference. And I do have some information from the scallop PDT, the groundfish PDT, because they hadn't been able to get that information into the document until more recently this fall. So closed area 2 by far is the area that seems to have the most clear indication that there are seasonal trends. The other areas, not as much. But this one is pretty strong, indicating, if you look at the figure on the left, this is observer data, an average D to K for each month. You'll see starting in June when the area is open, a pretty stable D to K, and then an increase as you get into the fall. It's pretty tight in terms of that statistical estimate, and, you know, so we're pretty confident that from these results, you know, you have a lower rate during the summer that peaks later in the fall. The figure to your right includes all of the areas outside of closed area 2, because if you recall, this closure restriction has been on the fleet ever since they've had access, so we don't really have any observer data for the months that they haven't been in there. So we took the areas surrounding closed area 2 and tried to look at to see if there were any monthly trends in the surrounding areas. This data was less certain. There's really not a lot of observed trips out there over time in every single month. So you'll see the error bars are, you know, a bit wider. But again, a similar kind of peak in the fall. Closed area 1, looks like we had an extra page copy here. Sorry about that. Closed area 1, moving to that area, as I mentioned, it's not as compelling. This is a similar type of thing, individual D to K for yellowtail to scallops caught by month, again, only in the months that the fisheries had access to closed area 1. Not as strong. You do see some increases in different times of the year, most notably November seems to be the month and January with the highest bycatch rates. But overall, the scallop PDT didn't emphasize this concentration on this area too much, just because in general there's so much less yellowtail caught in closed area 1 compared to closed area 2. Nantucket Lightship. The figure on your left, again, is that direct observer data from within the access area. Error bars are very large here. We don't have a lot of data. This area has experienced derbies in many of the times that it has been open, so you really only get that consistent observer coverage in June and July. And many times after that, the area is not open, not a lot of data to kind of fill these in, so not super confident in what the observer data is telling us for that area. However, if you look at the figure on the right, that's the observer data from all surrounding areas of Nantucket Lightship, which are heavily fished. Very good results every single month, a lot of data to look at, but it's pretty flat. If you'll see, it's not, you know, super strong, but a little bit of a peak in the fall again, but not pretty stable. So that was the bycatch information that the scallop PDT, in summary, looked at from observer data. And then, as I mentioned, we did look at scallop meat weights and how they vary by month. And these are actually probably more compelling in terms of seasonal differences for all the areas combined. The dark line on the figure is Georges Bank, and that's a change in meat weight for Georges Bank by month. And you'll see the line going across. That's when the survey is taken place by the Science Center in the month of June. That's your maximum meat yields typically on Georges Bank for the month of June. So the further the points are from that line, the greater the difference in terms of the meat weights you get per animal. So pretty obviously from here, the months of May, June, July, August, they're all pretty close to that maximum. The month of April would be that lowest dot. That's the month where you'll get the furthest, you know, the smaller meat weights compared to what their maximums would be in June. But you get a pretty good sense that, you know, in the fall and the winter, you're getting less meats per month. So the point that the scallop PDT, I think, was raising with this is that in an access area, you're given a poundage, and there's less incentive, therefore, to fish during those highest meat weight periods because you're not under the clock. And whereas in open areas, you have more incentive to fish during those higher meat weight periods. So I think in light of the situation we've been in the last few years with the access areas not performing as well as we'd like, you know, we felt that addressing this meat weight issue through these seasonal closures would help maximize the yield for these Georges Bank access areas. So we did develop a few alternatives, including that concept as well. The groundfish PDT, as I mentioned, also looked at the RSA project in terms of what its potential impacts on groundfish bycatch could be. There, some results from their meeting summary have been included in that same document 2A. There's about three pages of text from the groundfish PDT in terms of input, as well as those two studies that they worked on. In general, for Gulf of Maine, Georges Bank windowpane, and yellowtail, that is an additional thing that the groundfish PDT focused on in terms of impacts on windowpane in addition to yellowtail. Looking at those two species in particular, options 1 and 3A in terms of the seasonal modifications kind of capture all of the different points they have made about windowpane and Georges Bank yellowtail the best, meaning that the months of May, June, and July, from their analysis, seem to minimize the impacts on those two groundfish species the best. So fishing during those months would make the most sense. If possible, the alternative should avoid August through November if you want to try to reduce yellowtail flounder. In addition, avoiding the months of March and April would make sense for reducing windowpane flounder catch, because those are the months when those rates are the highest. In terms of spawning, the groundfish PDT also looked at spawning impacts. And what we know about yellowtail spawning is it seems to peak in the months of May and June. However, there is no direct research on the direct dredge impacts on spawning activity. We don't really know for certain what those direct impacts are, and we also don't know exactly where these spawning events occur, if they change, and exactly where they are on Georges Bank. So it's important to know when peak spawning happens, but we are kind of uncertain right now in terms of what those direct impacts are. These are a few figures that Tom sent me from the groundfish PDT. It's a little blurry, but in general, this is trying to show you, in addition to the yellowtail and scallop story, there are windowpane catch things to think about as well. Clearly, the months of March and April are those first two in the figure, those rates being much higher based on this is the RSA bycatch study for closed area 2. From all the stations that were repeated every month, March and April clearly have a much higher catch of windowpane than all the other tows for the other months. So this was the point about windowpane bycatch. Currently, right now, there is no consideration of giving a or needing to give a windowpane sub-ACL for Gulf of Maine, Georges Bank flounder. But I think the point mostly from the PDT, the groundfish PDT, would be that right now, the months of March and April, the area has been closed to the scallop fishery all along. So compared to no action, opening the area during those months, you might see an increase in northern windowpane catch. This is a pie chart of the 2011 windowpane, northern windowpane catch, and you'll see about 18%, it's a little hard to make out there, or 17%. Has come, estimated to come from the scallop fishery. So this is sort of where we are right now. So I think the groundfish PDT is highlighting that this is with those areas being closed in the months of March and April. So this is something we would, track and see if catches change if those areas are then opened under this framework, for example. The need for tracking that stuff would be heightened, perhaps. This is a summary of all of the Georges Bank closure options. There's no action, and as I mentioned, that's been the case since 1999. All the other options in between, and then alternative 4 is to completely eliminate them. The AP and committee, just to repeat, their preferred option is 3B, which you'll see there in the columns over to the right. It is, less restrictive than the current seasonal closure, and it is only focused on closed area 2, again, because that's where the most compelling evidence has been coming from and is definitely, in terms of the three areas, where the yellowtail bycatch seems to be highest. Just, again, to be clear, the scallop committee motion is recommending that 3A not even be in the mix right now. So when you're considering all of these different options, that is included in their motion as well. So I'll pause for questions, and there, as I said, both groups are supporting 3B.
So I'm going to be moving on here and making motion number 7 from the committee meeting motions, and I would move on behalf of the committee to recommend that the council adopt option 3B for Georges Bank Access Area Seasons and not include option 3A in framework 24. And that to not include, that was simply because it was not officially an option in the document. It was just something the PDT brought to the committee. And so we just needed to decide, are we going to, you know, draw it in, therefore it's part of the analysis that goes forward in the package or not. And the committee decided that we didn't think that was necessary. So that's the motion. It can be found on page 42 in the main document. And Deirdre did put up what is table 20 in the document, which I think is quite helpful for a quick reference to what the different options are.
Committee motion. I'm going to go to the audience for any comments. Ron Smolowitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We support this motion, and just a little bit of an explanation. This is the beginning of a new process here. We're not going to fully understand fleet dynamics, so it's very hard to sort of guess and project what's going to happen. August 15th to November 15th, enclosed Area 2, we know is a very high presence of yellowtail in that area. We know between August 1st and August 15th, there's a transition. We could have very low bycatch rates during that period of time. And similarly, November 15th and onward, the fish start leaving the area. Matter of fact, we just had a bycatch trip, came in Monday, and they already saw a major decrease in the number of fish present. We feel that we'll be able to collect a lot more data leaving those areas open in the beginning of August and the end of November. And if, in fact, they turn out not to be good ideas in the next framework, we should just expand the season. So that's our thinking there. It's sort of a research mode to see if, in fact, the fleet's going to be there. As far as the lightship area, that's southern New England yellowtail. As far as the presence of yellowtail, the numbers inside of the lightship is a lot lower than to the immediate east and certainly to what we're seeing in southern New England to the west. So there's no advantage to southern New England yellowtail in keeping that area closed. Similarly, closed area 1 has a very low presence of yellowtail. There's higher presence in the open areas than inside of closed area 1. So that's why, at this point, we think it's not logical to put that into the mix. As far as, we could get higher yields of scallop meats if we micromanage the fishery into small windows, but it could have tremendous market impact. I just had a comm trip come in, Captain Tony Alvarez in the back, $12.80 a pound. That's an important consideration, and that's why we need to stay away from micromanaging when boats could go out and fish. By leaving the areas open, we'll find out whether, in fact, we have a window pane problem in February and March if there's that much effort that's going to go out there. I don't suspect that. Plus, I suspect we'll deal with window pane with gear modifications more than with seasonal closures. So that's our thinking on some of these issues relative to this action, and we hope you vote this up. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Jim Weinberg.
I had a question about, just to clarify, the Deirdre's presentation. Not sure she's listening at the moment. Okay. Deirdre, I just had a question about something in your presentation, and I think that Ron Smolowitz just answered it for me, but I just wanted to ask it to be clear. You showed graphs on your page 14 in your presentation of, I think those were discard to kept ratios, and that indicated that there were higher discard rates from August to November. But I was wondering what the absolute amount of yellowtail that's discarded is by month. You can say that the rate is higher, but what really might matter more is the absolute amount of yellowtail. So I think Ron just said that that yellowtail were more abundant in the area during those months as well. So do you have that same perception?
Yes, we do. And there isn't as much observer data in those months because a lot of times the areas have closed early with the 10% bycatch cap we've had. So we don't have as much data to look at in terms of that in those fall months. The fishery hasn't been as active as in June and July. But, yes, it does appear that the abundance is higher those months, too.
Yeah, just to confirm that, the way the groundfish PDT analyzed this is rather than discard rates, we looked at the experiment that took place and looked at the catch per tow. That's in your binder under groundfish PDT report number 5. It's one of the attachments that Steve Correa did. And it shows a similar pattern. The catch per tow goes up during those months.
Thank you. Anyone else on the council? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Fourteen in favor, opposed, abstention, one recusal. 14-0-0-1, the motion carries. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've seen Deirdre and I kind of jumping back and forth there a little bit. There is a section in the document that is relative to accountability measures for the limited access general category trawl fishery, and we do have some fishermen from Long Island who are on a ferry and should be here at 10, so we're just making some adjustments because we would like to provide them an opportunity to participate at that point in our discussion. And so in your presentation, we're going to skip the next few slides, which relate to yellowtail AMs for the limited access general category IFQ fishery, and move to I don't know the slide numbers exactly, but it would be the slide that starts with improved flexibility of limited access general category IFQ decision 13 section in Deirdre's presentation. So I think just turn it over back to Deirdre.
Just more efficient than we expected. Slide 27 is what we'll flip to, if that's okay. Again, we're still talking about the general category fishery, but we're going to wait on the rest of the AMs until more people are here after the break, hopefully. So decision, the next issue was the second thing that was added to Framework 24, and it had to do with leasing and flexibility. Currently, the general category IFQ fishery, when it was first adopted, there were concerns primarily from the agency in just being able to handle and manage all of these tradings during the year with a very large pool of vessels. So they've had more experience in the last few years with sectors and have changed some things in-house. So originally when we adopted Amendment 11, we prohibited leasing and transfer after the fishing year began, and we also prohibited a vessel from leasing once it started fishing for the year. And we did those, as I said, primarily for administrative reasons and concerns about just being able to manage all of that. We get an indication from the agency. They're more confident that they would be able to provide this transferring and leasing during the year and after fishing has begun. So it's pretty straightforward in the document. In section 232, we have included a lot of upfront text to be clear about what vessels could do and when, and there would still be certain deadlines for getting those applications in, but we have tried to show this draft language to general category vessels before today, and people seem pretty comfortable with how it's drafted. So the committee and advisors have supported basically action to allow leasing and transfer during the year and after a vessel has begun fishing. So the motion is there from both groups to support including that flexibility. The third topic that was included in this framework would be to look at the observer set-aside program. This has been something that's been in the scallop fishery for quite some time. About 1% of the total catch is taken off from the top to provide set-aside to fund observers on the scallop in the scallop fleet. And right now, the only component of the scallop fishery that is not covered under the set-aside program is general category vessels in open areas. Everything else, Gen Cat fishing in access areas and all limited access fishing, are covered under the current set-aside program. And it really has provided a way to get a lot more observer coverage in this fleet. We know a lot more about seasonal trends and so forth because we have more coverage. But the fact that the Gen Cat open area trips have to compete with all the rest of the constraints on sea day coverage, we're really not getting the same level of coverage from that fleet that now under ACLs we're demanding. So the recommendation from the PDT was to expand the observer set-aside program to include coverage of GenCat vessels in open areas. So if this is adopted, moving forward, some of that set-aside could also be used on GenCat trips in open areas. This is section 242 of the document, I believe. And the other suggestion that's included in the motion is right now 1% of every single area is kind of linked to the coverage available for that access area or open area. The recommendation, again, from the PDT is that to make it more flexible, where you don't want to get in a position where you have one area running out, which we have been in that position in the past, you could move some of that set aside around, and it wouldn't be linked to an exact area, and so it would just be kind of a pool of set aside for observer coverage. The recommendation, again, supported by both groups, would be to provide that flexibility to kind of move that set aside around. Concerns, you know, did come up at the meetings last week that this is, you know, another strain on the observer set aside that would potentially, you know, have it run out faster. So there are definitely some concerns about that. And keep in mind, if it does run out, vessels are required to pay directly for that observer. They would still have to take the observer and then have to pay them directly. So we would definitely watch that and try to set the compensation rates, keeping that in mind. Just so you know, in the last few years, we have not been getting close to the set-aside limits for these different areas, and we're hoping that by making it more flexible and the ability to move that set-aside by area would help reduce some of that potential risk. And we could keep an eye on this. We do think the 1% would still be sufficient at this point to cover this new addition. But again, we kind of would have to see how that goes. So that is the preferred recommendation by both groups. You know, this we do need to learn more about this fishing activity, especially in light of having now a window pane sub ACL and a window and a yellowtail sub ACL. I think that's all I had on these two topics, and we can pause for motions.
Thank you, Deirdre. And on our list of motions, we are on motion 8, and I would move to recommend that the council adopt option 2.3.2, allow transfer of limited access general category IFQ during the year, as well as option 2.4.2 to include open area trips by limited access general category vessels under the current observer set-aside program. And finally, option 2.4.2.1.2, observer set-aside will remain at 1% and would not be area-specific. These measures can be found in the main document on pages 48 through 52.
Thank you. Committee motion. I'm going to go to the audience for any comments. Back to the council. David Pierce.
Yeah, a couple of questions. One for Deirdre. In 2.3.2, on page 49, there is a reference to cost recovery fees. And it simply says in the document, because this alternative would increase the complexity of NIMS IFQ monitoring, cost recovery fees would likely increase if this alternative is selected. What are the current cost recovery fees, and what are the anticipated increases expected if this alternative is adopted?
They're low. NIMS is really the best person to ask this question. It is, you know, you're allowed to charge up to 3%. If I remember, it's very, very low, 0.5%, even less than that right now.
Yeah, I think Deirdre was right. It's less than 1% of the total value of the scallop fishery. I think it was 0.7% last year, and we're still working on it this year.
Okay, thank you. And then on page 50, there's some added text highlighted in yellow, and this is very important text because it begins by describing how important the National Marine Fisheries Service is with its administrative role, with its monitoring role, It says this alternative would also require adjustments to how NIM supplies scallop IFQ toward the ownership and vessel caps. Then it goes on from there. And it notes the necessity of having accurate accounting to avoid the potential for abuse of the IFQ cap restriction. So I simply ask the National Fisheries Service if they have focused on this issue to the extent that they feel very comfortable that they will indeed be able to do the necessary accounting to avoid that abuse. This is central to accumulation issues and excessive share issues and the importance of the service's role.
George Sargent.
Yes, we think we can do this. We have some reprogramming to do. There's some, you know, internal tasks that will have to be done to take care of this, but we think we can handle it, yes.
Anyone else on the council? Tom Dempsey, then Dave Gazel.
I think Dr. Pierce's concerns have been addressed. I think this can be done with minimal cost, and the benefits of allowing this kind of flexibility, which currently exists in our groundfish plan for the limited access general category IFQ fishery, for me it's just a no-brainer. The benefits far exceed any of the marginal costs.
Dave Gazel.
My question's on the observer set-aside. Currently, we are not exceeding the 1%, but you, as I understand it, you propose to cover the limited access general category boats now in the open areas, which you haven't covered before. Is that correct?
Yes, they've been covered, but they've been paid for by the, you know, pool, the federal coverage. Vessels have not been required to directly pay or be under the set-aside.
Okay. And what is the targeted level of coverage under this program, how many, you know, percent-wise or whatever? Oh, sorry.
So the targeted, it's not that at the beginning of the year there's a target percentage that we try to get for every component. It is a little bit back calculated from what the set-aside would provide. So each year the agency takes the 1% set-aside and almost back calculates what type of coverage we would be able to get. In recent years, that has been able to provide anywhere from, you know, 5 to 10% in open areas and 10 or higher in some of the access areas. So I would expect with some of when we've been looking at this a little bit, and again, those details don't really occur until after you've picked your specification alternative and everything, that we would get similar coverage for the general category open area catch activity as well, and that it would still fit under that 1% set aside right now, where prices are and everything else. So there is a lot. It is dynamic. There is a lot. They do adjust it. They have the ability, NIMS, to adjust it during the year if, you know, prices change or things like that. The compensation could be adjusted to sort of provide more or less coverage, depending.
Okay. My concern, quite frankly, is that if you run out of set aside, and you said the vessels have to pay the cost, you know, as a percentage of their gross for the general category boats, this becomes a substantial amount of money. So, again, I'm concerned with this program as it's designed, that it's going to disproportionately impact those vessels if you run out of scallop set aside. And I think you answered the question in terms of how you can somehow adjust the coverage during the year, but, you know, I want to raise that concern early and make sure that there's a very clear understanding here that if you run out of set aside, you may shut those vessels down. They may not be able to fish if they have to pay for the observance.
Anyone else? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion? 15 in favor. Opposed? Abstention? 1 recusal. 15-001. I think what we'll do is take a 10-minute break. We're at 90 minutes.
Just real quickly, Deirdre, what time did they say their ferry was getting in? I mean, what time do we think we could expect them?
Right, or after 10, hopefully, after the break.
Well, okay. I mean, they're either here or not after
so
the break,
that works,
and then we'll finish up.
Yeah, we just have two motions related to accountability measures, and hopefully they'll be here.
10:10. Council members, can we get you back to the table? Council, back to the table, please. Mary Beth, you're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and our break time worked out perfectly. Fishermen for this section of the document who have significant interest are here, so I'm glad of that. And so now we'll go back to Deirdre's presentation, and she has it up on the board, slide 23. So we're just backtracking just a few pages, and I'll turn it over to Deirdre.
Thank you very much. So if you just go back a few pages, slide 23, this is the last topic related to Yellowtail and for the framework overall. And it has to do with AMs. If you recall, the current AM that is in this fishery for the sub-ACL of Georges Bank Yellowtail and Southern New England Yellowtail is only applicable to the limited access fleet. So right now we have a sub-ACL from the groundfish plan for this fishery, and all catch goes toward the sub-ACL catch from all fleets, but the actual AM that would be imposed if there were overages, et cetera, would only be on the limited access fishery. So there's been interest to develop and look at this issue closer to try to develop similar or some type of AM for the other component of the fishery to keep them accountable and help to reduce overall yellowtail bycatch as well. So we took a little extra time from last year to kind of work on this topic, and the PDT spent a pretty good amount of time, you know, documenting historical catches of yellowtail for this general category fleet. First topic on the first few slides, if we start with the trawl fishery, the trawl fishery definitely, when you look at the total catch, particularly for southern New England, mid-Atlantic yellowtail, is a decent percent of the total. Again, of course, it would vary from year to year depending on the activity from that fleet, but since IFQs have been implemented, it does appear from some of the data that the bycatch rate for this gear type is substantially higher than dredge gear. So of all of the topics, probably the Southern New England Mid-Atlantic trawl AM would kind of be elevated for that reason. So the document has three options in it for AMs for this fishery. And what the PDT tried to do is basically look at all the observer data for the last few years. And pretty quickly, what you learn is that the majority of yellowtail catch from this gear type is occurring in statistical areas 612 and 613, both in terms of bycatch rate as well as yellowtail abundance caught. So those are the two statistical areas south of Long Island, and that is the areas where the majority of this fleet catches scallops. So in terms of a spatial, staying with the same idea as the limited access AM, a spatial AM that seems to make sense for this fleet that would encompass the majority of yellowtail interactions would be 612 and 613. And the PDT's recommendation to kind of get this started would be that the schedule for the closures for that fleet would be the same as the limited access schedule in terms of percent overages, but it would have a maximum. And the sense here, similar to issues we faced last year, was that this fleet is not as mobile as the limited access fleet. So the idea was that, you know, these would be, you know, high distributional impacts on vessels that really can't, you know, if there's a large closure out in right from their port, they can't really as easily as the limited access fleet decide to completely fish somewhere else. So the idea of this would be that after 15%, no additional months would close to this fleet. So option one, the only difference between option one and two is that with option two, these trawl vessels would have the option to switch to dredge gear if there was an overage and an AM was triggered and they wanted to fish in this area. They could switch to dredge gear and not be affected by the seasonal closures. Option three is a little bit different. Vessels could still switch, but it would be a complete closure of the entire yellowtail stock area, so option three is obviously more restrictive. So that's a summary of the ones that are currently in the document. This isn't the area that we're talking about. It's pretty dark, hard to read on the screen, but those two statistical areas, it's a pretty large area. And I would just point out document 2A is all of the analysis that led up to this topic for both yellowtail, starting on page 25 through the end of the document, about 20 pages of analysis from the PDT about this fishery included in that section. But then at the very end, there are some maps of observer coverage by 10-minute square, so it's a bit more refined than this. You can get a sense of the portions of these areas that have these higher bycatch instances. But as I mentioned, the schedule would be restricted, so anything over 15% wouldn't apply to this fishery. And again, that what that really means is that the months with the highest yellowtail bycatch, the areas would close, but as you move on in terms of overages, they wouldn't be affected beyond 15%. So for the months of July through November, these areas would always remain open to the GenCat trawl fishery, regardless of the overage. So this is a bit of a compromise, working back and forth between looking at historical landings by month as well as bycatch by month, trying to kind of balance the issues of that this is a smaller fleet, not as mobile, and so forth. So it is a bit of a compromise that the PDT kind of put out there as a straw man to get the discussion going. When we brought these ideas to the advisors and the committee last week, they had a different spin on it a bit, and their concerns really were that because trawl gear has such a higher bycatch rate overall compared to dredge gear, they felt that there still was a pretty high risk of this relatively small fishery, which comprises of about 50 vessels that are active in the southern New England area, primarily from New York and New Jersey. They right now currently are landing about 1% of the total scallop catch or 20% of the GenCat catch. However, they're catching, you know, upwards of 15 to 20% of the yellowtail from recent estimates. So they're, I think the advisors felt this you know, pretty large mismatch. They would prefer some sort of in-season, more aggressive type of AM for this gear type because it still had the risk of causing the entire AM ACL to be exceeded for the fishery. So if you see from their motion on the board and the committee followed the next day to support it, would be an in-season estimate of projected catch from this component of the fleet during the year, and when it was estimated that that segment of the fleet was estimated to catch 10% of the total ACL, this AM would actually close the entire southern New England mid-Atlantic stock area, so that's from Long Island south all the way, for that fishing year and the following fishing year. So that's the AM that was developed by the advisors, and then the committee followed the next day. Concerns were raised at the committee meeting about being able to actually come up with an in-season estimate for this segment of the fleet. As we mentioned, this fleet is not observed at the same standard, just not as many available days for this fishery. You did pass a motion just before that would probably help that, and we would get more coverage. But would we get enough to, in a reliable way, make an estimate that they are projected to catch 10% during the year? It's still kind of a question that came up during the meeting. So just to keep in mind, this is a newer alternative. The committee did actively include it in the document. We don't have any major information to give you because it was just included on Thursday about these, you know, this type of thing, but we do have concerns, I would just say, about being able to actually monitor it in season for this fleet. But that is the motion that the committee is offering, and there are the three other ones in the document. Just quickly moving to the dredge side for the general category fishery. In this instance, just to go back to trawl, I'm sorry, to be clear, there is no trawl AM for George's Bank included in this document. There is no trawl fishing on George's Bank, so no action essentially would apply that the George's Bank, you know, if it's exceeded, there would be no AM for the Gen Cat trawl fishery, just so people are clear. It's a non-issue. There's no trawl fishing there allowed. Moving to dredge for the Gen Cat fleet, we did look at both yellowtail stock areas, starting with southern New England. Really, there's only one alternative in the document, so you have the no action, and then you have the recommendation that we started to develop after we looked at a lot of the observer data and so forth. You know, the PDT really tried to identify smaller areas because when we brought this to you last year, there were concerns that these large closures would have disproportional impacts, again, on these smaller vessels that are not as mobile. But once we really looked at that, at doing that, you would be able to close smaller areas, but it was exactly where people fished. So it essentially had that same impact, we felt. So instead, we explored a different spin on it this time, that the Gen Cat dredge fishery AM would be the same as the limited access fleet in terms of its area. So it would be the same larger spatial area, but there would be an ability for, if the Gen Cat dredge fishery stayed under 3% of the total ACL, and again, this would be an estimate at the end of the year, if it was found that they stayed under 3% of the total, AMs would not trigger for that fleet. 3% is more than they have caught last year and projected to catch this year. They're kind of more in the 1% to 2% range. So the committee, the PDT, originally just identified 3% because it was sort of a rounding up from one of the years was just over 2, I think. So there's nothing really important about 3%, except it would, you know, put a line in the sand that if it's more than that, AMs would trigger. So it gives the incentive for that fleet to stay under theirs, but not to be under AMs if, for example, it was caused by them. They still had really low bycatch, but for some other reason, the AM was triggered. So that's the difference this year compared to the last time this was brought to you. And the schedule is a little different also for this fleet, providing some months and some areas within the AM closure to this fishery. The schedule is actually on table 23 in the document. It's a little complicated, but we tried to, the PDT, come up with a schedule that closed the areas with the highest bycatch right off from the beginning, but leaving some access to this fleet for some of the months because, in general, you know, this fleet is not very mobile. So that's for southern New England. For George's Bank, the AM that the document has no action, or it has the same AM as the limited access fishery. Both the advisors and the committee support no action for George's Bank because, honestly, the AM area is way out in closed area 2 where they don't fish anyway. So, you know, if you want to feel good about it, you could implement it, but really it wouldn't have an impact on the fishery currently. So the suggestion from the advisors and committee is not to bother and only have an AM for the southern New England yellowtail stock for the Gen Cat dredge fleet. So there's two motions related to AMs, one for each gear type. And finally, there's another decision in here related to the timing of yellowtail AMs. You know, this is still kind of new, and we're tracking these things, and the regional office website has been expanding to include more in-season estimates of these things, but, you know, we still have a long way to go in terms of turning around data faster so that we can have these more timely estimates of bycatch. So the alternative in the document is a bit of a refinement. Right now, it says, you know, at the next year following an overage, that's when AMs would trigger. That's no action. The alternative in the document sections 2.2.3.2 is a little bit different in that it says if you have reliable information, and again, it's the discretion of the agency, if they have reliable information, yes, AMs would trigger in year two. But if there's a delay and they only have a few months of observer coverage, for example, and it's just not enough current information to trigger that, then it would wait until the next fishing year. From what I understand, this is similar to language that's in the groundfish plan, and the idea and intent would still strive for that reliable value to have it trigger the next year, but in the absence of it, it would push it back. So this does cause potential delays, if you will, of AMs another year, which could have impacts, particularly on George's Bank, with the U.S.-Canada issue. But those are the two options in front of you. The advisors and the committee both support the new alternative in the document, which would be, only if you have reliable information you would trigger that AM. So I believe that's all. So it's the three different concepts, and then you would be finished with Framework 24. Then there are committee motions.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if you look at the list of committee motions, I'm going to reverse the order of 9 and 10 because I think 10 is a little bit more straightforward and we may want to spend a little bit more time on 9. And if you look at the main document, starting on page 46, the AMs relative to the limited access general category on dredge fishery, we have decision 11 and decision 12. So it's page 46 through page 48, and the motion I'm going to make on behalf of the committee encompasses both of those decisions. And so committee motion number 10, move to recommend that the council adopt section 2.2.2.3.1, so the New England Mid-Atlantic Yellowtail AM for the limited access general category dredge fishery. And 2.2.3.2, yellowtail AMs trigger in year two if reliable data is available, or year three after a full year of data available, and no action for Georges Bank yellowtail AM for the limited access general category dredge fishery.
Committee motion. I'm going to go to the audience first for any comments.
Thank you, sir. We don't particularly oppose this. We support it for the most part. My only concern with that was that when this came out was that I thought it should have been a slightly higher number, like 5%, because we had previously been operating under the 5% other segment, which I tend to call de minimis bycatch. We have data developing out of an RSA project that we will soon have available probably by next year. It's going to show us that we have a very low footprint, but I just felt that 3 to 5%, maybe 4%, was a better number. And I think that I thought I heard that had come out of the PDT as well, like a 4 or 5% number. But overall, we're in favor of this. If the number can be raised to 3 to 5, I'd much more appreciate it. Thank you.
Would you just put your name in for the record?
Sorry. Mike Marchetti, Eastern New England Scallop Association. I represent about a dozen dredge boat scallopers out of the remaining 90 on the East Coast.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Dr. Karp.
Mr. Chairman, I'm still on the very steep part of the learning curve here and certainly can't speak to a lot of the history that's got us to the point where we're at now. And the comment that I'm going to make is actually much broader than this particular issue. But it relates to the levels of observer coverage, the amount of monitoring that's really necessary to give us confidence that we can support the information needs for this kind of decision-making. And it's more just to express some concern, because I don't think we have a good analytical basis for looking at what acceptable levels of coverage would be, or what the trade-offs are, I guess, between uncertainty and coverage levels in this particular context, but I just want to register some level of concern about that in a generic sense.
Thank you. Anyone else on the council? Dave Gaethel.
Just a question for Deidre in light of what Dr. Kopp said and what the other gentleman said about perhaps looking for a little higher number. I mean, what's this 3% number based on? Is it based on observer coverage, projections, or?
That came up at the advisory panel meeting, too, and there really is not a lot of sophisticated things in the 3%. The PDT felt that some kind of target should be in there so that, one, the fishery itself has a target within the total ACL to kind of strive for and stay under. And we just felt that in the last few years they had been in the, you know, 0 to 2% range, and it was a slight roundup from that. But really, it wasn't linked to observer coverage. It was more to put that line in the sand so they had a target. Nothing more sophisticated, really, than that.
So the numbers, again, I'm trying to get to where this number came from. It's not based on any real coverage at all. It's basically just, I don't want to say pulled out of thin air, but it almost sounds like that.
Well, it's based on that in the last few years, the GenCat trawl fleet, based on pretty, you know, they have decent coverage. The dredge component has more decent level of coverage over time. Still not as high as the limited access fishery, particularly in open areas. But for the GenCat dredge fishery, the estimated catch percentage from that fleet from 2011 and 12, you know, based on those observed trips being expanded to the fleet, estimated that, you know, as total they were catching, you know, around 2% of the total.
Okay. Well, what I'm concerned with is, you know, with the previous motion we passed, we are now going to have a higher level of coverage, probably. You know, if this number changes because we now have real information, I don't want to put these people in some kind of catch-22 where we had no information, so we picked a number. Now we get information. It turns out the number's higher than we thought it was, and then we shut them down. You see what I'm concerned with? So the second part of the question is the information won't be used. The AM won't be triggered till year two, at the earliest, possibly year three, correct? So there is some time to do an action, to change something if you know, new information becomes available and it turns out that our projections aren't what we thought they were. Is that a fair statement?
For the second part, yes, I think so. I think a lot of that alternative, the second part of this motion, came up because in recent times these numbers have been changing. We're still learning a lot. We need to wait for the groundfish side of things to know if the total groundfish ACLs have even been exceeded or not, because that's now linked to whether AMs are triggered for the scallop fishery. So there's a lot of back and forth where it's making it, in some cases, difficult to have those numbers by the end of the year to know whether things are triggered. So we still would be striving for that, but in some cases, you know, it might not make the mark, and then it would be triggered later.
Okay. I mean, I would support the motion with the idea that it's better to get it right than it is to get it fast. You know, I don't care if it's done in year two or year three, but I want it to be right. I don't want to invoke something and come back and say, oh, you know, we had a, you know, whatever, math mistake or whatever, and it really wasn't what we thought it was, and now we got to go correct it yet again. So, and I also will support it because if the number turns out to be higher than 3%, there's the opportunity through a future framework to adjust the number.
Anyone else on the council? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Fourteen in favor. Opposed. Abstention, 1. Recusal, 1. 14-0-1-1. Motion carries. Mary Beth.
So we have just one final committee motion. It is committee motion number 9, relative to AM for the limited access general category trawl fishery. So it's a long motion, but on behalf of the committee, I move to adopt motion 12 from the AP meeting related to limited access general category trawl AM for Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Yellowtail, if reliable data is available to make an in-season projection of yellowtail catch. AP motion 12, if the in-season estimate of projected limited access general category yellowtail trawl scallop catch exceeds 10% of the total Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Yellowtail Scallop Fishery Sub-ACL, then prohibit trawl gear for limited access general category vessels for the remainder of the following fishing year. Vessels could switch to dredge gear at any time. If yellowtail catch remains high for the limited access general category trawl fishery, then a future amendment should be developed to prohibit trawl gear. So that's a long motion. The information on this particular section is starting on page 44 of the main document. And, you know, relative to the comments that Dr. Karp already made, this concept of doing an in-season projection and closure has some problems. It's not clear that the agency can implement this. And if you look in the document, this is a hybrid of the current options that are available. As we indicated, there are some trawl fishermen here. They were able to come to the committee meeting and participate, and they have some concerns. So I do think we probably need to take a little bit of time on this motion.
Committee motion. I will go to the audience for comments. Yes, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to be here. And I know that you guys gave me a little extra time, and I appreciate that. My name is Jeff Krause. I'm the owner and captain of the fishing vessel Elizabeth J. out of Shinnecock, and I am a current IFQ limited access general category trawl fisherman. And there's a number of things here that I'd like to address, and I hope I don't go on too long, but I'll try to get right to point. Just basically, I do want to bring up the fact that the fleet is, there's a very large percentage of this fleet is based in Shinnecock. And looking at the figures that are presented by Deirdre and her committee, you could see that we contributed 30% of the catch in 2009, 20% in 2010, and 18% in 2011. So we're talking about a fleet that has a very large IFQ. And one of the reasons for that is we're a traditional group of fishermen who have harvested scallops with a trawl on a regular basis throughout the years. So we were able to establish ourselves as a significant contributor to this resource, or the harvesting of this resource. And although we limit ourselves to trawl, the method of trawl, it's because of our nature as a fishing fleet that we consider ourselves to be more flexible. We target different species throughout the year. And I think it's something that the committee has to understand, that that's something that this flexibility shouldn't be held against us. We shouldn't be forced to start involving ourselves in another means with which to harvest because of a method that is erroneously, I might point out, and I will explain that, considered to contribute to an over-harvest of yellowtails as a bycatch. And I'm going to go into that right now. And I want to discuss the fact that if you will look at the observer trips throughout the years, I have a document in front of me that I don't know exactly what it was, Deirdre. Maybe you could point it out to the committee.
Go ahead.
Okay. As Deirdre looks, I'll explain it. But it explains, it shows the amount of observer trips and the total catch broken down throughout the years. And in 2006, it mentions 30 observer trips. And as in terms of type of table, table 29. Page 38.
Of document 2A.
And if you turn to that, what you'll see is it shows the amount of observer trips, the type of trips, and maybe Deirdre can explain what OA and training obviously speaks for itself.
Open area.
Open area training, okay. And if you'll notice on that document, you'll see in 2006 there were 30 observer trips, total yellowtail 13 pounds. 2007, 35 trips, 50 pounds. 2008, 36 trips, 225 pounds. 2009, 13 pounds. 2010, we see the problem come up, 1,497 pounds. Unfortunately, I don't have the page in front of me, but I know Deirdre had made a mention of this in one of the other documents, that there were 5 to 10 trips that were an issue, that there were 50 to 350 pounds observed on those trips. I don't have the document there, but it was in one of the packets. Unfortunately, like I said, I didn't have the packet. But I also want to add that when this issue became... was raised to me, and I sat on the original general category scallop advisory panel, there were issues at that point made with the fact that the trawl fishery was being questioned as to yellowtail bycatch, and I knew this was an issue right from the get-go. And when this was being looked at back in 2009 into 2010, and this observer data, which I have in front of me, was first presented to me, I had major concerns about the sampling techniques. And I contacted Amy Van Atten, and I expressed these concerns. And my point was that all the trawl boats in the fleet weren't really paying attention to how the sampling techniques were being executed. And I found out through my conversation with Amy Van Atten that they use what they call a volume-to-volume method, which is, in effect, what they do is they take a basket or two of scallops, measure the size of the pile, and project what was in the pile. And my concern was that our trawl boats, when we dump our bags, is striated in the respect that all of the skates and fish will be on the top of the pile, fall into the front of the pile, and then basically once you get past that, it's all shells underneath that. So what happened was, apparently they're using this volume-to-volume method. Everything is in the front of the pile, and the observers were taking a basket or two of the fish and projecting that throughout the pile, and they were coming up with a number which was absolutely an aberration as to what was actually in the pile. I had requested some of my observer data to be sent to me. At the time, I never asked for it, but because of the fact that this was, I could see what was developing here, they sent me the information. I had one trip. And I have the data. Unfortunately, I left it in my car, but I'd be glad to bring it in to show anyone that was interested. I had one trip that was, they recorded supposedly 150 pounds of short yellowtails. That is just an impossibility to catch that much, even if I was ground fishing. It's just, that to me was a sign that something was wrong here. So I contacted Amy, and I made a suggestion that all the captains from that point on, which would include any of the samplings, any of the observer trips as of 2012, we would record every piece of yellowtail. So there was no more volume-to-volume measurement. There was actual measurements taken as to how many pounds were landed. I have that data. There were 10 trips that were made that the captains had their requested the data be sent to them, and I have 10 trips for them for 2012. Excuse me. 10 trips for 2012. The total yellowtail landings were 88 pounds, and that was for a variety of months. I believe it was February, March, July, August, September, and October. And I did notice through the some of the other tables that I believe Deirdre had mentioned that there didn't seem to be a great discrepancy between the months of the landings. So that would appear to me that the landings are pretty consistently low, 8.8 pounds per trip. So again, I go back to table 13, and I'm looking at these total yellowtail landings for these observer trips, and the only year that I see any great discrepancy is 2010, and as I pointed out in the literature that I received, there were 5 to 10 questionable trips where the landings were extremely high. And I also addressed this with Amy, and she had sent out a gentleman by the name of Glenn Chamberlain. And in the email, she said that, "I know that one of your concerns was observers using the volume-to-volume method and how the values of certain species can be skewed with a non-representative subsample. We'd like to accomplish this with a vessel visit to get a better idea of how smaller scallop trawl vessels are set up so that we may be better able to prepare observers with sampling methods to obtain the most accurate catch information." So this, I received this email, and this was being, Glenn came to visit me in August. So obviously there is an issue here with the observer coverage, and the fleet has taken it upon themselves to make certain that we're getting true values here, and we're not coming up with that extrapolated values to determine what this bycatch level is. And considering the fact that there's such a short amount of coverage, as this committee well knows and has already been discussed, I find it very difficult to believe that a motion like this can be presented and with any kind of sense of reality that this is something that should be forced upon this fleet to have to accept. I seriously question also whether the council can, through a framework action, as opposed to an amendment, perform a new sub-allocation of stock such as yellowtail. The Amendment 15 document on page 112 notes that the sub-allocation of yellowtail given to the scallop fleet does not so distinguish between the limited access general category or the limited access vessels. I see nothing in the amendment which provides for further sub-allocation, and the current proposal makes such a dramatic change to the fishery that it exceeds the authority of the council to pursue such action in an expedited process such as a framework. I also do not see the rationale for limiting the trawl fleet to 10% of any sub-ACL where the catch is alleged to have been over 20%. And again, I say that our data will support the fact that this number that is being said that we've caught is an aberration. But however, getting back to this motion guarantees that accountability measures will be invoked, closing the fleet down for an extended period of time. The harsh nature of this result underscores the need for a full amendment process to allow an allocation by percentage that does indeed reflect the historical catch or needs and unique nature of the fishery. And finally, as I discussed, the issues that I raise about samplings are significant. I think it's important for the committee to recognize that the trawl fleet has no desire to trigger AMs for the dredge fishery. We are not interested in going over our yellowtail, seeing anybody harvest something that we shouldn't be harvesting. We have means with which we can try to eliminate the catch, and we've already taken steps to do so. We've eliminated some ground wire. We've gone to larger bags. There are steps that can be taken. This is a small fleet, and things can be done to make certain that we don't go over, that we don't add to the ACL for the fleet as a whole. And we are concerned that we don't want to be looked at as the bad guy in the fleet. So with that in mind, I think that it's important to understand, though, how we fish and how difficult it can be for the observers to get a proper representation of what the bycatch is. And as I have made clear, I believe, at this time, we're taking steps so that the observer coverage reflects these numbers and aren't numbers that are just a math mistake. And I think it's important for the council to recognize that. And the data from 2012, when it all comes in, will prove this point. So in closing, I just want the committee to recognize the fact that it's important from a legal standpoint and also from a standpoint of fairness that we don't have to deal with any drastic measures because this data is very – everything points to this data as being erroneous, number one. And given time, we will prove that. So to ram any kind of significant – motions here to limit the trawl fishery or put us on notice as having to deal with our overage in yellowtail bycatch, it's important for the committee to give us time and let the numbers prove that what we're saying is right here. Thank you very much.
Anyone else in the audience have a comment? Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Marchetti, scallop advisor. I just want a couple quick comments is that, you know, my understanding under Magnuson requires accountability measures. This limited access scallop fleet, a general category scallop fleet, is the last segment of the scallop fishery that needs to have something done. I personally fought it all along, and we've gotten to a point where something finally has to be done. We've been very proactive for bycatch measures. You know, the scallop fishery has a pretty low footprint, especially the small boats, this side of the Shinnecock line. I would like to say that we recognize the high level of participation of this trawl fleet and the amount of coil they have, and we did ask a lot of questions about where this data came from. We were wondering if it was somehow mistaken from groundfish trips or how it could possibly be so high. We kicked it around, but still keeping in mind that we have a responsibility along the line here somehow. So we looked to gear modification as an option as opposed to any further drastic measures, but we threw it in as fair notice that, geez, if something doesn't change, something's going to have to be done because we don't want to risk the whole LAGC or let alone the whole scallop fleet, especially in the face of continually cutting yellowtail numbers, as everybody's dealt with here over the last few days. We thought that the 10% would help them, to give them leeway. And if their catches are as low as they say, then that should not be a problem at all. And we didn't want to take anything from them. We wanted to make sure they had the opportunity to put a dredge on, even though that decision that we put forward was questioned by other advisors. You know, why not just go straight up and shut it off? Why allow them to keep adding to the bycatch problem? So we want to throw it in. We want to try to make sure we gave them as much leeway and opportunity as possible, but still say, hey, look, if this is indeed a problem, as the numbers that are put in front of us, which is what we have to work with, then this is going to have to be dealt with, and that's just the way it is. And I think Deirdre can say that we really agonized over this. We had many sidebars over how to accomplish this, but and I know what it's doing to Jeff here, but that's I'm sure you all recognize the situation we were all in. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience? Yes, sir.
Well, let's say good morning and thank you guys for your patience and for hearing us out. And Deirdre, thank you for your work and your fine presentation. I'm William Reed. I own the fishing vessel Providence in the North Sea, and I also represent a few other skippers who couldn't make it here today, Tiny Giant, Greg Huber, Mike Bowes, Windsong, Bob Greger, Bay of Isles, and a few other boats. I see the problem that you guys see, and it does look like a really bad problem, and it's unfair that you have a smaller segment of the fisheries harvesting more than you would say their fair share. So Jeff pretty much hit every nail that was sticking up. but we do seriously question the data collection. In past times, when we've had observers on the boat, nobody likes to have a policeman on the boat. Nobody likes to have an observer. So we didn't pay them much attention. As fast as we could, we'd get them off the boat when they came in, and that was be that. We didn't question the data. We didn't ask for the data. We were just like, you know, do your thing and leave. So we realized the error there, that we didn't pay close attention to what the observers were doing. And in all honesty, if this was a true problem, I think the proposals that are presented are fair. But I don't think that the data you're seeing is accurate. So I would request that you guys table this motion and wait till you see the most recent data. I know you're working with the best available data, but I know you guys are aware of that it's our lives and our livelihoods, and it's put food on the table for our children, helps pay my college expenses for my daughters. I know you are aware of that, but I would just ask that you guys table this motion and for a year and wait till you see latest data, because we don't see the problem. So thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Yes, sir.
Good morning. My name is James Krause. I'm the owner and operator of the trawler Marianne out of Shinnecock, New York. I am opposed to the motion relating to the LAGC trawl fishery. Number one, there is an issue with sampling data. There is information concluding that the sampling data is not accurate, and this data places the trawl fishery in an unwarranted negative light. Two, personally, in about 20 trips from the end of March through early November, my vessel landed approximately one dozen yellowtail flounder. Thirdly, I strongly urge a delay of all the proposed restrictions on the LAGC trawl fishery in this framework action. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a quick question. Does this motion require increased sampling of this fleet? In other words, are we going to be shifting observer effort if this motion goes into play?
I think that's an important question. I think the first question is maybe broader in that I'm not sure we can have in-season estimates with high confidence that they're showing us what's going on with the fishery right now. But arguably, if people really want a up-to-date in-season estimate for this pretty small fleet, it would seem to be the case.
Well, my first comment is I'm totally against trying to come up with in-season. I don't think we could do that. So I don't think that's technically possible. But the fleet seems to be served notice that they're going to be observed. And obviously, there's going to be a level of observer coverage, regardless of whether this gets passed or not, that if there was a sampling problem, which I fully suspect there was because we had the exact same problem in the dredges, then the data will show what the real bycatch is. I just want to make sure that we don't take resources from monitoring the overall general category fleet. And if we end up using too much observers, then that could impose a cost on general category vessels if, in fact, we run out of observer funds from the set-aside. So I'm just trying to get an idea of whether or not this, even without the in season, whether somebody would suspect that this is going to create a shift of observer coverage and have consequences.
Yes, sir, in the back.
Hello, my name is Kenneth Rayner. I own a fishing vessel, Dorothy M. I'm the captain, and I'm really opposed to this motion. You know, the last trips I took the observer, there was no more than 6 yellowtails caught per trip, you know. Most of the time it was less than that, you know. But, you know, I have my crew save every fish that comes on the boat now, so there's no question of how many yellowtails we are catching, you know. But, and thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Anyone else in the audience? George Darcy.
Thank you. And it's nice to see the people from Shinnecock here. Thank you for making the trip. I know you've been through a lot in the last few weeks, and hope you didn't fare too badly and you get to recover as quickly as possible. But the point I wanted to make was we have some real serious concerns about the in-season nature of this, similar to what Ron just raised. And we don't have a lot of observer coverage. And I think the likelihood of us having reliable data in-season in a timely enough way to react, particularly when the consequences are as potentially significant as they could be, is pretty unlikely in the near term. So from a practical standpoint, we have some serious issues with this.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a number of observations here. First of all, nobody on this council, and not me in particular, wants to put anybody out of business. That's not our goal, never has been. Second observation is that I've always heard data being questioned, and I don't pay it a lot of mind because I expect to hear it all the time. But the fact is that this series of data points from 2006 to 2010 does raise questions. So I'm not saying that we should cut slack here, but it does look like there could be a problem. And the third observation is that there is research currently ongoing in Rhode Island, at the University of Rhode Island, that may well shed light on this. The problem is that we can't walk away from this. The AP statement, and this was stated by the chairman of the AP at the committee meeting, was that the feeling of the AP was that if they had the power, they would eliminate the gear type completely from the fishery. Based on the fact that what they were seeing was that the trawl vessels had as much as 15% to 20% of the entire yellowtail flounder bycatch, which, as we can see, may or may not be a completely accurate statement. I'd like to point out that the dredge vessels were almost closed out of the fishery by this body in a very recent past because of this particular problem. So it's a serious problem, and it has to be dealt with. As far as what AM should be put in place, and I did hear the comment that that what we're doing here would lead automatically to a closure of the fishery, I would point out that if you've got a speed limit of 70 miles an hour and you go 60, you've got no problem. So I'm concerned about this. What appears possible that we have a perpetual danger to to other gear types, particularly the limited access general category dredge vessels, from overage by this particular segment of the industry due to high bycatch. So the question is, what do we do here? Well, one thing is there is a defect in this amendment. We do have to eliminate the in-season. That's just not workable, as it turns out. I would like to make a I'd like to change this motion, but I'd want to hear what the rest of the council has to say before I get to that point. But I do agree that the in-season is most certainly not workable. So we need to make some changes here. But I'd like to hear other input before we do that. But that's where I stand with this right now. I do think that this segment needs to be subjected to increased scrutiny because of that overage. That overage was significant, and I need compelling evidence that it was anything other than that before we fail to act here.
Rick Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to see if we could hear from the Observer Program while we were here about what progress had been made or is currently being contemplated with respect to changing the sampling protocol for these vessels. I think we have heard a significant concern about the data collection method. I see Amy coming up now, and I don't know if we can get a response to that question, but it seems to me the flexibility that's been cited by the Shinnecock fleet is an important aspect of how that fleet operates. And, you know, I think that's going to be bounded going forward by some practicability concerns with respect to yellowtail interactions. Having said that, I think we ought to keep that in mind as we go forward, but perhaps this year we could get a better understanding of those interactions. It's certainly been our impression that the rate of interaction with that gear type is different than it is with dredges. And if the fleet's telling us that there's a significant issue with the sampling protocol, then perhaps we could collect better information over the course of this year. But I'd just like to hear if there are any changes in the sampling protocol that have already been implemented or being considered.
Dee, Amy, why don't you come right up? And you had a comment before.
Definitely let Amy answer that one. I raised my hand before to bring up the data issue since it was raised so much by the audience, and Amy can speak to that as well. Clearly, some of these trips, the volume-to-volume issue, she'll explain further maybe, but the 2011 trips that were observed, we did look through them very, very closely because of, you know, things that Jeff and others were raising about the methods from 2010. And just so, you know, I apologize, it's not in the same table to compare, but there were high bycatch trips from 2011, the ones that are driving these estimates of the recent, you know, post-ACL values, and they were not in the volume-to-volume method. They were weighed every single fish. So clearly, you know, those are real numbers. It's not the same issues that have been described in the past. But, you know, you did hear from the industry they can do better, they can do more, the more aware that they are in large of the importance of this. But just so slightly more confidence perhaps about the 2011 values that are not right in the same table but in other places in the document, you know, we were seeing trips measured correctly and so forth with yellowtail.
Amy.
Thank you. Amy Van Atten, the branch chief for the Fisheries Sampling Branch, and I run the Observer Program. I have worked with Mr. Krause over the past year or so on this issue. I think Deirdre just mentioned awareness, and this was a big, I guess, learning point for all of us. The biggest issue with sampling on these vessels is it's a small vessel. There's a high volume of catch on board, and there's not a lot of room to sample. Also, I don't think that the industry really understood what the observers were doing out there, and certainly didn't have an idea that yellowtail catch was going to be a problem or an issue or being looked at so closely. So they did request the data. Well after the fact, I addressed the advisory panel at one point about these trips and went through the trips trip by trip. We did not find any errors. There were no erroneous data, although the captains didn't feel like the numbers properly represented what was caught on a tow-by-tow basis. There have been some trips that had used the volume-to-volume method, and we both acknowledged, Mr. Krause and I, that we could do better in working cooperatively together to get a better representative sample. So the biggest change would be providing outreach and education to the industry, and they also inform us of how best to sample on their platform. So we have done that. We've visited the port. We've looked at his vessel. He did acknowledge that there were some difficulties on board in allowing the observers to have access to properly sample the catch. So I think we can both do better to get better data in the long run. But there were no errors found. There were a lot of actual weights that support the catch of yellowtail.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amy, do you have the data for 2011? Because we don't have it yet.
No, I was not prepared for this ahead of time, so I don't have those data with me.
Bill Carb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's two sort of levels of uncertainty in the bycatch estimation that's based on observer observations. One is the uncertainty associated with the sampling, which Amy has spoken to and which we've heard quite a lot about, and clearly there's improvements to be made there. But the other is the uncertainty associated with the variability among vessels, which is only possible to elucidate with a relatively high sampling rate if we expect bycatch rates to be inconsistent among vessels, which I think is the case here. We're looking at very, very low levels of coverage. So we expect to see a very high degree of variability, a very low degree of confidence in being able to project from these low sampling levels what the actual bycatch rates are across the fleet. So I think we need to be mindful that, you know, of these two different dimensions of uncertainty and the consequences that both of them have on our confidence in being able to project and make decisions. But the coverage level, I think, in this particular instance really is quite low.
Terry Alexander.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious why the observers would extrapolate anything on a 600-pound trip. I know that's, 60 bushels of total catch of everything, maybe 70 bushels. And I'm just kind of wondering why they wouldn't weigh everything instead of actually sampling them.
Well, it's really a space. It's a space and a time challenge that if they're deck loading, not separating out the different tows, it can be difficult to sample. And there's really very, very limited space with the number of crew that they have and taking the observer and the gear on top of that. So they do try to get as many actual weights as they can, and they are, in our training and certification process, they are told to get a full sample throughout the depth of the fish pile. But that really does take some cooperation of the crew on board the vessel to attain that.
Rick Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure I understand. It sounds like from Amy's comments, as I understand them, that the sampling that's conducted this year will potentially benefit from some changes in the methodology that reflect the dialogue that occurs between the observers and the captains with respect to some of the unique challenges on board these specific vessels. Is that correct, Amy?
Yes, I feel that's correct. Yeah.
Dave Gazel.
Yeah, I think there's several threads running through this and several issues. First is the issue of subsampling. Those of us who trawl know that the heaviest stuff ends up in the center of the pile, that the pile is not randomly it's not a random sample. You have to sample the whole pile. You know, if you have a tow with a lot of skates, they're going to be in the middle. The yellowtails are going to be around the edge. Assume it's the same with the scallops. They're the heaviest thing. They're going to be in the middle. The fish are going to go to the edges of the pile. One of the things that will have to be done on these trips is a full workup of the entire pile in order to get a real understanding of the catch and the bycatch. The second issue I hear running through this is the fact that fishermen don't request their data. And this is a real problem. It's a cautionary tale for all fisheries, not just this one. I am stunned at how few people request the information from their boat. This is a continuing and ongoing problem. You don't know what's been recorded if you never look at it, which brings up the third issue. A lot of fishermen don't care. Well, they really should. And that also brings up the next issue, which is these gentlemen come and they have what I call the deer in the headlight look. You know, here they are. They've conducted this fishery for years. Nobody paid them any mind. They went out and did their thing. And all of a sudden, people show up in their town, you know, get on their boats, you know, invade their space, and then a year or two later they come back and they go, oh, by the way, we're going to shut you down if, you don't stop catching these fish, which they've done for a long period of time, and, you know, it was never an issue. So, and especially when you get into some outlying ports here where people don't have daily interaction with fisheries management, you know, they're not really aware of this paradigm shift that's gone on in the last 5 or 10 years. So I'm extremely sympathetic to their issue. I'm also sympathetic to the fact that there's huge variability in this data. I mean, it ranges from 13 pounds to 1,500, which indicates to me that there's huge variability in the catch, probably variability in the vessels as well. And their abilities to avoid the yellowtail. The other issue is what percentage is an appropriate percentage. The gentlemen come and say they think the number's too high, but right now they're actually going to benefit from having a number that's too high. If their catch is, in fact, lower than what they say and we put a high number on this, they should be able to stay under it with no problem. You know, I think we should be prepared to move ahead. I don't think you can do the in-season thing. Not without a much higher level of coverage and some verification procedure as to the accuracy of the information. I just don't see that happening. I mean, it has to be a feedback to the vessels as well. But again, the number one thing I would take away from this, not only for these fishermen but for all fishermen, is request your information. The other is, do your very best to get your entire catch sampled. Don't accept subsampling. Quite frankly, if you're not in a real volume fishery, there's no reason to subsample. I know on my own vessel, I require that they go through the entire pile. So I'm not sure how we move ahead here, other than I think we're going to have to amend this to remove the in-season aspect of it. I wanted to get those things on the record because, I'm really concerned that a number of fisheries are not looking at their own data, and then when it appears in a summary form at the council level and we're about to take action on it, they, rightfully panic. The other question I had was for Amy on this table 29. I don't know if you have this or Deidre can give it to you. The types of trips, it says OA training, OA training ET. If you could tell us what those mean. I mean, I know what training is. That means it's a new observer, an inexperienced one that's learning.
Okay, the term training there would are training trips. So that is open area and training trips. So in 2006, there were 30 total trips. We give that annotation of a training trip for any of the first trips and a new gear type that an observer goes on. So they may have experience in bottom water trawl, or they may be brand new but it's their first trip on that particular gear type in that fishery.
Okay, thank you. I mean, a suggestion moving forward would be, I understand the designation, but certainly the first thing we'd want to do is employ experienced EFOPS observers, people that have a good number of years sampling trawls, and then train new people after that, because even it's going to be a learning experience for experienced people, but at least they have some sense of what they're looking for. So that doesn't really enter into this in any way other than moving forward, that we, you know, try to get the best information possible. I'll conclude there. Thank you.
I have David Pierce, then David Preble.
Those fishermen who came to the mic and spoke made some very good points, some very compelling arguments for not having an in-season adjustment. Certainly, I think that is a very valid point. And David Gethel has spoken to the issue as well as several other people. So in order to be responsive to what those in the audience have said and to acknowledge the good points made by David Gethel, I'd make a motion to substitute. And motion to substitute would be simply, if the limited access general category, yellowtail, trawl, scallop, catch, exceeds 10% of the total southern New England, mid-Atlantic, yellowtail, scallop, fishery, sub-ACL, then trawl gear for the limited access general category vessels will be prohibited the following year. So I remove the text at the beginning of the current motion that speaks if the data are adequate for in-season adjustments. I think we can conclude that it will be inadequate in light of the sea sampling coverage. So we get rid of that, and let's just be specific relative to the amount that they may take and the consequences of that, which would be the following year, it would be prohibited. There would be no in-season prohibition.
If I can, just to get clarification, in the existing motion, when the trawl gear was prohibited, they could switch over to dredge gear. Is that your intention here, or is it just to mimic that part of the previous one, or you're just eliminating the trawl gear?
I think it would be self-evident that they could certainly use dredges the next year. They just couldn't use trawls. So the intent of the latter part of the motion is still there. They can use dredges, but not trawls the following year.
Is there a second to that? Dave Preble. Discussion? George Sarcy.
To be consistent with a previous motion that you passed, would your intent be that it would be in the following year if reliable data are available? If not, it would be the year after that? I mean, we're not going to have all the data in at the beginning of the next fishing year. So
I'm assuming that there'll be enough data so the projection can be made. We'll be in a position to know whether they have exceeded or will exceed the 10%. I don't want to have a year hiatus or an interim year and then the following year after that implement the restriction. This indeed puts a demand on the service, on the National Marine Fisheries Service, to take a real close look at the amount of sampling that has been done. Clearly, some concerns have been expressed about the nature of the sampling, and Amy did an excellent job at the mic explaining what they are doing and what they intend to do. I'm confident that they're doing a good job now and improving, so that we will be in a much better position to have even greater confidence in what the estimate of the bycatch of the yellowtail flounder will be. So it would be for the next year, not a year. For the following year.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I support this motion also. I did get the 2011 and 2012 data here, and the deal of a K for 2011 is .00133, which is in keeping with what the gentleman who came up here said. And in 2012, it's .000427 for just the portion of 2012 that's available, which, again, makes the 2010 year look like some sort of an outlier. So I'm inclined to go along with this. The only question I had was for Amy, if she's still... Yeah, Amy, I did hear you say, just to make sure I got this right, that the 2011 data did not use the volume, method.
Okay, we did. Yeah, we've gone through those trips, and most of the weights were actual weights. I think there may have been one trip with using the volume to volume method.
Okay, so again, that seems to go along with what the gentleman came up here said. So so I'm comfortable with this. I'll support it.
Frank Blanton. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just a little concerned here that, you know, if they catch 11%, you're going to shut down the entire fishery for the following year. Why wouldn't you just have some type of payback provision where the following year they're only allowed 9%? If they go to 11%, the following year it would be 9%. I mean, it just seems a bit odd that you're going to shut down an entire fishery if there was one or two bad players here. It just doesn't seem to be consistent. If somebody could explain, I'm open to listen.
Dr. Pierce.
Well, we're not shutting the fishery down. They have to go to different gear. Now, obviously, that can be a problem for some vessels, but still, we're talking about a trawl fishery versus a fishery that's prosecuted with dredges. And I reflect on past work that has been provided to this council about the nature of the catch of trawl vessels versus scallopers, and the trawl vessels tend to catch smaller scallops. I've seen the data on that. Clearly, if you're fishing with a trawl, then fine, go ahead and do that. But yellowtail flounder has taken on such extreme importance that this particular strategy is necessary, and the obligatory shift to the dredge gear would be would be necessary.
Rick Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the long run, I guess I am concerned. I am concerned about how this might affect the flexibility that the Shinnecock fleet has made reference to. And so since this is a framework adjustment, I would just suggest that we plan on at least reviewing this in the next framework so that we can benefit from looking at some improved data. Amy Van Atten spoke about the potential changes that are going to occur and the way the data are collected in the Observer program this year. And I would just suggest that we take another look at it with another year of data when we go through the next framework process.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. A couple of years back, the Coast Guard made a presentation on safety fars, and I used some of that data for a testimony to the National Transportation Safety Board, and by far, the largest amount of accidents and safety concerns are with the limited access general category fleet, where vessels change from nets to dredges. The vessels weren't designed that way, and there was an inordinate amount of safety concerns. So I think when addressing this question, I think the key is, like Frank said, are you shutting down a fishery, or are you thinking that they'll be able to change readily over to dredge from nets, and that may not be the case.
Terry Alexander.
And to that point, we do, I have a general category scallop IFQ on my boat, and my insurance company is very, very adamant about stability tests and stuff when we switch, even though it's a 63-foot boat, they're adamant about all my hatches in the right places and everything. So, I mean, there, Paul's got a legitimate gripe there, I think, because, I mean, not every boat can just switch over and it be a safe venture.
Dave Gaethel.
Well, I think Paul's raised a very serious issue here that we may not have really given enough consideration to. I have a 44-foot boat. I wouldn't go scallop dredging with it. I don't. It's too small. And I've seen boats smaller than mine fishing for scallops, and I'm horrified at the rigs I see on them. I don't, you know, we had a series of events in Eastport, Maine a few years ago, up in that area where boats rolled over when they hung up in the tide. So I would, if it's possible, could some of the gentlemen that are here come up and tell us the size of their boats so I get some sense of how big the vessels are and you know, what they draw for water and what the likelihood is of being able to tow a dredge safely.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that Mr. Howard raised, because generally I think the largest boat in our fleet is 50 feet, and the majority of the boats in our fleet are low 40s and in some cases high 30s. So, you know, this was a very good point, and most of the boats are light fiberglass and wood. So obviously a heavy dredge doesn't really do that well with it. Matter of fact, I might add that with that in mind, I mean, we've had some bags, some pretty tremendous sized bags at times. And, you know, even getting a bag in the boat sometimes is a little tipsy, but it's a lot easier to handle that than a steel dredge that might be smashing against the side of the boat. And if I might, I don't know if this is proper, but I do want to just make one point in regards to this motion. Is that okay? I noticed that this this AM would be triggered if it was 10% of the ACL for the fleet. Now, I think that if this motion is even going to be presented, I think it's important to recognize the fact that if the total ACL isn't exceeded for the fleet, however, if due to some, you know, aberration of data, that our fleet happened to go over 10% and this AM would be triggered. However, if the ACL for the fleet wasn't exceeded, why would our fleet be subjected to an AM when the fleet wouldn't be affected by this? Just want to make that point. Thank you.
Thank you. Captain Nicola.
Just in reference to Paul's comment, the vessel size that had the abnormal amount of safety issues was the 30 to 39 foot general category vessels.
Thank you. David Pierce.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the motion to substitute didn't come out of the blue. It's a refinement of the motion that was provided to this council from the committee, which was a motion based on what came to us from the advisory panel. And on the advisory panel, we have a number of general category fishermen. So maybe that advice coming to us from the advisory panel representing the limited access general category trawl fishery was ill-advised. I don't know. Again, it's what came to us from the advisory panel. And I'm still guided by what the advisory panel provided us. I still see the logic of it. 10% is still a relatively high number relative to what they actually may take. So the fishery may not have difficulty avoiding the 10%. But it gives them a fair warning that, indeed, they've got to do, as a general category trawl fleet, they've got to do whatever they can to minimize that take of yellowtail, else there is a consequence that they don't want. So, again, it came from the advisory panel.
David Gaethel.
Yeah. Deidre, was there a closure provision? I'm looking at the slides and trying to, in other words, if they go over by 10%, as an example, is there, you know, 3 or 4 month closure, consequence closure, something like that? Is there any other option other than just no season?
Right. Option 3 is similar to this one, which would be to close the entire southern New England yellowtail stock area. But there is option 1 and option 2 in the document, which are more similar to the limited access and general category dredge approaches, which would be a seasonal closure of statistical areas 612 and 613. So the two statistical areas just south of Long Island are the other options in the document, which would close, depending on the overage, by for certain months, with the backstop that they would never close for some portions of the year. I think it's in one of the slides. Sorry, I don't have it to memory. But there are other options, option one and two, that are in the document that would leave the areas open at least through July through November. So it would be a similar seasonal closure type of approach.
Okay, I mean, I think that, you know, reflecting on the issues that Frank raised and the safety issues, I think we have to modify this somehow to have some kind of consequence closure. I'm trying to find, this is option, I want to make sure I get the right options here. 3A and 3B on pages 41 and 42 is an example. Have I got the right ones here, or am I?
Page 44, Dave. 44 through 46, I think, is that section of the document.
Option one is 2-2-2-2-1-1. Okay. Four twos and two ones.
Page 45.
And two ones. All right. If you, you know, go on to some other comments, and let me read these over and see if I want to make a motion to amend.
Dave Preble.
Sorry. I as far as the using the dredge is concerned, I doubt that very many, if any, of these guys would want to make that change. In addition to the safety issue, there is also a learning curve. They haven't used that gear, and they'd be starting out fresh with a new gear. I think I'd be reluctant to do that, even if the boat were suitable. So I think we should keep it in because the option should be available, but I doubt that very many people would exercise it.
Tom Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this motion actually makes a lot of sense. I continue to be disappointed and frustrated that we're tasked with managing to tiny sub-ACLs and consistently told that we can't possibly have the information in a timely way, even by the end of the year, to make decisions and to implement timely accountability measures. But I do think that this is the best we can do today. I think this motion came out of a really lengthy and comprehensive conversation at the AP from a bunch of guys who are trying to make this work somehow for the trawl fleet and avoid just initiating an action to eliminate the gear. I mean, that's what this came out of. We want to successfully harvest the general category fishery and the IFQ without exceeding, without, you know, being held to a portion or subcomponent of that fishery that catches an orders of magnitude more yellowtail per pound of scallop. So I think this makes sense. If this AM is triggered, and we have reason to believe from what we've heard today, or from the data side, from the gear modification side, that it won't be triggered. If it is triggered, then the decision to change gear or the decision of what to do next and how to respond on an individual basis, that's an individual decision. Somebody has to look at their vessel, they have to look at their gear, they have to look at their options and make a business decision. But I do think that this is the way to go. We can't, we really can't give any more flexibility to the trawl fishery. We need to successfully harvest the general category scallops. Thank you.
Terry Alexander.
To Tom's point there, my concern is there's no trawl vessels on the advisory panel giving advice on this, so I don't know. I don't know what the advisory panel is made up of, so it kind of makes me nervous that none of those guys are represented on there, so that was my concern with it.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think in deference to the individuals who've come a long way from New York, we've discussed this at length and tried to do the best we can with it. But I appreciate Dave Pierce's comments. This is originated at the advisory panel and went through the oversight committee. We have removed the in-season calculation, which is not doable. And from what I'm hearing, the data that was quoted, the bycatch rates are pretty low, and this is unlikely to be to be triggered. So I think we've done as gone as far as we can go with this, and I would encourage you to call a question.
Mr. Mark Alexander.
With regard to what Mark just said, I'm looking at Table 10 on page 25, and it looks like year-to-date in 2012, the trawl fishery is already at 10% of the Table 10 on page 25. Am I looking at that correctly?
Yes, you are. And it should be pointed out based on the decisions yesterday, the Framework 48 is likely to allocate 66 metric ton of southern New England mid-Atlantic yellowtail to the scallop fishery as a sub-ACL. So 10% of that would be 6.6 metric ton that, you know, would be the target, I guess, for this trawl fleet, right? 10% of that. So 13,000 pound-ish for the year. And that is higher than what these numbers you're looking at. And, of course, 2012 is not over yet. Definitely need to caution that this fleet, as Dr. Karp has mentioned, is so under-observed that these numbers are based on a very small number of trips. And in some cases, I believe for 2012, we don't have any of the trips that, you know, the gentlemen in the audience have been mentioning in the system yet. So it's very likely that once those, you know, cleaner trips, if you will, that they're mentioning are put in here, these will fall and these rates will go down. But right now, in the absence of information to, you know, populate that, we're still using the previous year. You know, the monitoring website will use the last 12 months of information that they have from observer data, which is pretty dated at this point, the numbers that you're looking at. So, yes, they are at 10% now. Will that be the case at the end of the year? You know, I hope everything that we heard today is true, and those trips, once they're added in, would bring these rates, you know, down, and you'd see that change. But it's, you're reading the table correctly, but it is based on older data that hasn't been replaced yet.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, clearly something has to be done to address this fishery, but given the uncertainty in the data, you're going to be subjecting this fishery to a pretty harsh accountability measure that may just be an artifact of statistics and not reality. So it's something that's bothering me about it.
Dave Gaethel.
Deidre, could you go through, is the table for option one, table 22, I'm still struggling here with these various alternatives.
Sure. So option one and two are exactly the same in terms of the spatial area that would close and the map for that. Hopefully in here. Otherwise, it's in my presentation. It's statistical areas 612 and 613. So option one and two would be a spatial closure of those statistical areas the same. The schedule would be the same. Again, table 22 is the schedule in terms of the overage. And again, that would be for the whole fishery overage. The schedule would be the same. The only thing that's different between option one and two is that with option one, the vessels cannot convert to dredge, and with option two, they could. They're otherwise very similar.
Okay. On the motion we have on the board, does the 10% still part of that? In other words, they have to exceed the 10%, or this is?
The 10% thing was completely new as of last week. So these options were developed earlier. There's no 10% target or any. There's no threshold or anything. These have no separation of the sub-ACL or anything like that. This is just if the overall AM is triggered for the scallop fishery, this is what would happen to the trawl fleet, option one or two. It doesn't have anything about if they only catch 10% or more than 10%.
So if the entire LAGC trawl fishery exceeds its ACL by the numbers in Table 22, then these are the consequences for the trawl fleet. Maybe I'm missing something here.
I'll try again. I'm sorry. No. If the entire scallop fishery sub-ACL is exceeded, forget what fleet caught what. If the whole thing is exceeded and the groundfish fishery catches their part of the sub-ACL to trigger the entire ACL being exceeded, by these amounts, again, the total scallop fishery. If the total scallop fishery sub-ACL is exceeded by 2% and the groundfish fleet caught theirs, so that this would trigger, these are the months that those areas would close to the Gen Cat trawl fishery. So it's going to vary depending on that overage. More longer period of time for a higher overage. But it's linked to the whole fishery, not just the trawl fleet. So in that regard, it's easier to manage and monitor because you're not, you know, splitting the fleet down. It's just the total sub-ACL.
Okay, and this occurs the following year. What's the timetable here?
Based on the decision you made previously today in a different motion, this would happen the following year if there's reliable information to make that decision, or if the agency feels that it doesn't have reliable information to make that decision, it would be the year after that.
Okay. Based on that, then, I'm going to make a motion to substitute, and it's to substitute Section 2.
We're already 2D. Got to vote this one up or down and then do something.
Oh, this is already a motion to substitute. Okay.
Further discussion? On the motion to substitute, all those in favor? Six in favor. Opposed? Nine opposed. Abstention? None. Recusal? One. 6-9-0-1. The motion to substitute fails. Now we're back on the main motion. Dave Gaethel.
Try a new motion to substitute. I would make a motion to substitute section 2.2.2.2.1.1, option 1.
Is there a second to that? Mark Alexander. Discussion. Terry.
I wanted to ask Dave, was your intention for them not to be able to switch over or to be able to switch over to dredge?
I think based on the testimony I've heard, it's not to switch over to a dredge. I think, that may seem a little harsh, but the main reason I'm making this motion is the safety issue. I'm not convinced these are vessels that can or should switch over to a dredge. And again, it makes it pretty stark too. If you can't, you know, you can't get your house in order, you can't fish during a period of time yet. So it kind of adds a consequence to the issue.
Okay, since this is a change from what was recommended by the committee, I'm going to go to the audience. Any further comments on this?
First of all, can you clarify exactly what this is? Because we don't have the pamphlets. Is this option one with a 10% sub-ACL? Is that what this is being proposed?
No, I don't believe it is. It would be exactly what's drafted in the document outside, which is number one, and it's on page 45. So there's no 10% target or anything. It just as it's drafted there, so it would be the spatial closure with this season. Yes.
Thank you.
As far as support is concerned, I think that as a fleet, we would prefer this than the motion that was originally presented. Although any type of constraints, obviously, we have concerns about. However, if we had to be forced to a season, I think that we would live with this a lot more so than we would live with the original motion that was presented. And I think rather than, I'm speaking more as an individual, and I think if any of the guys would want to, you know, express themselves, obviously they're welcome to.
Mike Marchetti.
Thank you, sir. I was going to speak to the idea of making sure they had the opportunity to switch over to utilize a quota, but, I mean, if they don't want that, then that, I guess that's their choice. We're trying to make things as easy as possible on them. And as far as safety at sea, there is a concern, obviously, but I'd like to point out that this side of the 7230 line, since Amendment 4, our fleet has had two different mentalities on how to pursue scallops. And you go to the south and the west, it tends to be a bigger steel boat. You go to the north and the east, it tends to be a 40 to 45-foot fiberglass boat. I started out on a 37-foot wooden Novi, moved to a 40-foot fiberglass one, now a 45-foot. Your typical scallop boat might be a 45-foot Novi, 40-foot, or it might be a Stanley 44. That is a typical fish boat here, and we do multiple fisheries as well. A lot of us don't have enough quota to substantiate a full season on. So I'm not trying to talk down the guys from these areas. I am looking for ways to support them, and we grandfather them in Amendment 11, and it's continuing to cause us some real head-scratching here. So I just want to make sure I threw that out. I wanted to make sure they had the opportunity to put a dredge on.
Again, thank you. I was at the Scallop Committee meeting last week, and I did speak in favor of Option 2, which is similar to 1, but gave us the flexibility to use a dredge if we are bumped out of the trawl fishery. Like the other gentleman just spoke, you know, my boat's a 55-foot boat, so we could handle a dredge under, and we could learn just like everyone else learns, and we could afford the expense of taking the nets off to put dredges on. Otherwise, the floor has been pulled out from underneath us, and the noose gets tight. We need the option to put a dredge on. Otherwise, I won't be able to harvest my catch. If this is hit, I'm done. So we need the option to put a dredge on. You know, I find it extremely important to have that flexibility. So please give us that flexibility. Thank you.
Anybody else in the back row there? Yes, sir.
Good morning again. Is it still morning? Yep, a couple minutes ago. Just to throw some more wrenches in the engine. I agree that with Bill's point of view. However, as an individual, it would be impossible for me with my 12-meter vessel not impossible, but very improbable and very unlikely, and it would just be a major negative impact on my business. And number two, I just to add on, last week, a couple weeks ago, whenever it was, when we got to Boston, it was in the middle of the hurricane, I believe it was a two-day meeting, and Wednesday, Thursday, we were still involved in cleaning up with the hurricane, et cetera, and a few of the members on that council, and I also was told that none of them were 12 fishers, but they were not aware of some of the issues that we brought up today. So before they brought up the one which I guess hopefully is going to get voted away right now, which was the original framework accountability measure that was brought up here today. But again, they were made aware when they spoke with us informally outside the meeting. They were almost shocked, I think, at some of the things that they were not aware of. Thank you.
Well, my name is Eric Hansen, Limited Access Permit Holder.
like to speak against this motion to substitute. It doesn't address the issue that was brought forward with the excess yellowtail that the trawl fishery catches. Now, if you look at the line in the sand that's drawn on the original motion, it is out in left field somewhere. They say that they've refined the sampling techniques and they're not catching the yellowtail. That's fine. That's great. But this line in the sand is 10% of the yellowtail quota for the southern New England scallop fishery catch, not the general category catch, the total scallop fishery. So it affects me. Now, this is a fishery that's basically 30% of the general category, basically down to 1% of the total fishery, getting 10% of the yellowtail. To put that into perspective, it's a very generous line in the sand. And that's the point I'd like to make.
Can I see your hand right back? Yes, sir.
Hello, Kenny. Serena from Dorothy. I'm for the flexibility of putting in dredge on my boat, even though it would be pushing the envelope, but, you know, it's better than no envelope at all, you know what I mean? I'll be able to go or at least use my quota up, you know. But there's definitely safety issues, but better than losing everything I have, so thank you.
Anybody else in the audience? Bring it back to the council. Mary Beth?
So Eric really raised the issue that I intended to raise, and that the, was the rationale that the AP brought forward the motion in the beginning, is that it's a very small subcomponent of the fishery, taking a very large percentage of the yellowtail for southern New England. It is something that we will need to continue to watch. We could modify this motion to include the concept of the 10%. And have it be a time area closure, which is consistent with other accountability measures for other sectors of the fishery, or we could leave the motion alone and make sure that we keep track of this moving forward and see how this sector of the fishery operates. And clearly a message to them, if this continues, percentage of catch, it's going to be back before the council, so hopefully they would, you know, be listening to that. So I think either way, but I think that the point that Eric made is exactly why so much time was taken at the AP on this issue, and it's a disproportional percentage of yellowtail catch by a small sector in the fishery.
Frank Boyle.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, my original questioning on this motion was to the not being able to switch, and I agree with Mark Gibson, what he said earlier about, you know, the 10%. If they are catching substantially lower than that, that shouldn't be a problem. And so with what Mary Beth just said, Mark, and I know we can't, because we're playing with a motion, but I think ideally this motion should be that it still has the 10% in there. It has the closures, and at the bottom they should be allowed to switch, because safety is an individual choice. I mean, we can't tell somebody, you know, what to do. We can tell them not to do something, but when it's somebody's choice to go ahead and do that, I mean, the safety is there. We're not mandating that they switch to that type of gear. So I know we can't change this for now, but I think that would be an ideal motion in my mind anyway.
Dave Prebble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can't support the motion to substitute either. I have always preached increasing flexibility on the general idea that we, over the last 35 or so years, we've decreased flexibility within commercial fisheries. It's a very, very rare occurrence that I would vote to decrease flexibility, and I won't do it here. And I also agree with what both Frank and Mark said. But I will not support this. Thank you.
Peter Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with exactly what Frank just said, so I won't be supporting this motion either. Thank you.
Further discussion? Dave Gaethel.
Just to probably save us some time, is it easier just to vote this down and then bring up the one that allows them to switch to a dredge, or can, you know, I change my own motion now and make it that with the concurrence of the seconder?
I think at this point we should vote on it. We've had the discussion. Vote it down or up. And then
okay. That's fine.
Go on. Further discussion? It appears.
Yeah, before we potentially vote it down and then come up with some other substitute to the main motion, just a question of the maker of the motion. Would the maker of the motion's concerns be addressed if we simply change the language in this option on page 45 so that vessels with trawl gear will be permitted to switch to dredge gear and fish in the areas closed by this AM? Maybe that's just a simple change that would address the maker's concerns. I just ask that to avoid more motions.
Yeah, that would certainly be fine with me. It's fine with the second. That's
fine. It makes it option two. Yeah. It makes it option two. That's
so if you just vote it down and you go with option two, that's already been crafted in the document. Further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion to substitute? Zero. Opposed? Thirteen. Opposed. Abstention? One abstention, one recusal. Okay, the motion to substitute fails. We're back on the main motion.
Okay. Try again. Make a motion to substitute section 2.2.2.2.1.2, option 2.
Is there a second to that? Mark Alexander. Discussion. Frank.
Is it my understanding that this is not tied to the 10%? So they have...
That's correct.
Then I still can't support it, because I think they should be tied. I mean, the constraining factor here is the yellowtail at the 10%. The other things that we're trying to do is to keep the fishery viable. So going ahead with this, that small part of the fishery could impact the greater fishery, which I don't think is correct either. So I think we still need to put the cap of the 10% in there somehow.
Further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion to substitute. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 in favor. Opposed. 7 opposed. And 1 abstention, 1 recusal. As is my normal operation, I will not vote on it. The motion fails. We are back on the main motion at this point. Further discussion? Terry.
How about I make a motion to use option 2 with a 10% trigger? Same as Dave's motion, but put the 10% in there. If somebody will second it.
Okay. I just wanted to ask Dee, just at from a process standpoint, if we did option 2 with a 10% trigger in it, is that doable at this time? And
I was just going over there. I'm trying to make sure everyone knows what the 10% thing is, and I'm not sure everyone has the same exact impression of what it is. So whoever made the motion, maybe we should just clarify. You know, originally from the advisors, the idea of it being an in-season type of thing is that it would be a 10% cap, and their individual AM would trigger regardless of what happened to anybody else, because it was considered their target. They exceeded it. They get an AM no matter if the whole AM was triggered for the fishery or not. But I'm hearing some people not thinking about it that way, so I think we should clarify it, and then I'll just try to answer again if it's if we can do it.
I need a second to the motion. Laura is the second. Terry, would you like to?
That was my intention that they'd be held to the 10% number individually. That little section. I think we're going to be setting sub-ACLs for all little segments of the thing soon, and, you know, I think that they should be, you know, they're a fairly small fishery, and I think 10% is more than liberal for their section of it. So, yes, that's my intention.
Okay, is everybody clear on that? Dr. Pierce?
No, I'm sorry, I'm not clear. Table 22 on page 45 is relevant to this motion, correct? In other words, the schedule based on the overage of the sub-ACL, the months that would be closed down, right, to trawl gear, that's part of the motion, correct? Okay, so if there is an overage of 10%, then according to that table, the limited access general category vessels with trawl gear would be prohibited from fishing in areas 6/12 and 6/13, March, April, and May, and December, January, and February. All right, so what else then happens with the 10% trigger? Seems like we've got two things here. I'm not understanding this. Okay, the 10% trigger is already in Table 22 as part of this option. So I think we have kind of corrupted what the advisors have provided us, and this doesn't make any sense.
Dee, can you help us out on that?
I'll try, but I think I'm struggling similarly to some people as well. And I think maybe what happened is, you know, these were very different options without any of this discussion of a 10% target that came later. So it's people are having a difficult time mushing them together. Maybe to take a step back, the options in the document 1 and 2, these percent overages have to do with the total sub-ACL. Nothing split by fleet or anything like that. So if the total sub-ACL is exceeded by these percentages, these are the months that those areas would close to the trawl fleet. There's a different table in the document that has a schedule for the GenCat dredge fleet, and yet again, for the limited access fleet, this is the same table and schedule, but it goes all the way down. It's more restrictive in that it would close the areas potentially for the entire year for the limited access fleet because they, as you know, has been stated by this council, have more flexibility to move and fish in other places. So, it could be more restrictive in that regard. The 10% trigger that I think people are trying to add in here, I'm not actually sure where you're headed with it, if it's going to be a sub-ACL, literally, that they get 10% of the target of the total. And what we've heard from the agency is we can't really do that yet. We can't subdivide this sub-ACL up front at the beginning of the fishing year and say, okay, we're going to track your little sub-ACL and we're going to track yours. We just don't have the level of coverage in a timely way to do that. So we were told when we started this framework that we can't officially subdivide it up front. Sort of maybe the more creative way that we tried to do that with the GenCat dredge fleet was not to say up front that they get 3% of it, and that's their sub-ACL, but that they have a target that if they go over it, they get AMs, but if they stay under it, they don't. So I'm not actually sure if that's how people are thinking about this 10% thing or not, or if they're actually thinking it's a sub-ACL division, which originally we were told we couldn't really monitor that.
I'm struggling with this from the standpoint that if you can't understand what this is, I'm wondering whether this is something that just should be ruled out of order at this point in time. You know, I fear that we're getting into our sort of usual operation of doing things on the fly when there has been very good AP committee and staff work bringing options to us. So I think at this point I'm going to rule this one out of order, and we'll be back on the main motion. It's 12:12 now. We can try and finish up with this if everybody wants to at this point. I'm seeing most heads going, yes, let's get this done. And at that point in time, we'll figure out whether we want to push right through with priorities or take some sort of a lunch break. So I'm going to rule this one out of order. We're back on the main motion. Rick Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to belabor this. I was just going to suggest, given the hour and some of the confusion about this issue, if we might benefit from reflecting on it over lunch and then coming back and taking it up. But just a suggestion.
Well, when I looked at most of the other heads around the table, you may be in the minority. But if people want to do that and suggest it, I'm happy to do that. Sherry? Okay. Let's take a lunch break. It's 12:14. I'm going to ask the people be back at 1:14 or 1:15, 1:15. 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15. 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15, 1:15.